Morning. I'd like to call this meeting to order. Today's Tuesday, July 28th, 9 a.m. We're at the council conference room at the city offices for the regularly scheduled city council workshop. Those who are able, would you please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Roll call, please. Here. Oh, here. Thank you. Here. Here. Thank you very much. The first item on our agenda is a resolution approving the federal fiscal year CDBG annual action plan. Mr. Land.
Some of you, this kind of looks like a rerun. For some of you, it's going to be new. This is something we are required to do with our federal grant.
Good morning, Mayor, members of City Council. Jose Papa for the Development Department. Today's presentation is just provide a brief background on what the CDBG program is, provide an update with the accomplishments and the things we've done with the funding that we've received over the past 3 years, and provide you with the action item on our program, because how we're going to spend the upcoming year's allocation. These funds will become available October 1st, 2015. So we're part of what's called the Community Development Block Grant Entitlement Program. And in general, this program was started in 1974, and the intent of the program is to provide funding for housing and development needs. Activities that are funded with this program must meet one of the national objectives of the program. And that is, one, to benefit low and moderate income persons. Two, it must prevent, another objective would be that it prevents or eliminates slum blight. And then the ones that the monies that you receive could be used to address an urgent community development needs. That is an emergency. The program guidelines are typically, it's something that's come up within the past 18 months, or as more typically used, like let's say a natural disaster comes to the area and there's a weir or some infrastructure that needed to be repaired, and you can use the CDBG funds. And what's important about this program is that it's a local decision on what program and projects are fund. That's a local decision.
Jose, what's the definition of low and moderate, low moderate income?
Low moderate income. It's typically low to moderate income. It's 80% or lower than the area median income. And right this year, I believe that the area median family median income is about $50,000. So about 80% of that would be, that's for family of four. I'm sorry. So 80% of that would be the low moderate income level.
So about $40,000 for a family of four.
That's about right. But there are adjustments also. And there's a formula that the CDBG uses, or HUD uses, when it calculates what's the actual, if they can account the fair market rate of housing in the area, that's it. Then your low moderate income would probably be higher. That cutoff level would be higher.
Do you know, Jose, what the federal government considers poverty level to be?
It's typically, it runs more in the extremely low, more in the 30% of the area median. And so some of the programs or activities that are typically funded with CDBG that exceed the national objective, things have included things like housing-related activities, public services, which would be limited to 15% of the allocation, economic development activities, infrastructure improvement, and typically when you have an infrastructure improvement like a bike path, you typically do it in an area that qualifies based on the fact that 51% or greater of the population in that area is low, moderate persons. And finally, you are allowed to use 20% of the allocation for planning and administration. So what's required in order to get the entitlement for the allocation from the federal government would be that every 5 years we do a consolidated plan. And this is a long-term plan, a five-year plan as to the types of activities and projects the city might consider funding. And that document also includes an analysis of, a socioeconomic analysis of the residents within the city. And then every year, getting it more down to a yearly basis, the annual action plan. And this is a one-year plan that describes the actions that will occur over the coming year. And it's prepared annually. And then the third thing that's required by CDBG is the CAPER, the Comprehensive Annual Performance and Evaluation Report. And that typically comes within 3 months after the end of the fiscal year. So somewhere between September 30th of this year and December 30th of this year, we will provide a CAPER, our annual report. And that's reviewed by council and that's forwarded to HUD for their review and approval.
Just one thing that I didn't mention. There are two kinds of CDBG grants. There are competitive grants and there are entitlement grants. When you reach a certain population level, you can opt for an entitlement grant, which means you're not competing. You simply meet the requirements. Initially, the city of Palm Coast was receiving competitive grants where your projects were competing with others. The actual dollar amount is higher for a competitive grant, but it's problematic whether or not you receive it. So several years ago, when Palm Coast hit the population threshold, council determined that it made more sense in the long term to go for the entitlement grants, which is what this is.
Jose, what year are we in the consolidated plan?
This is the fourth year. So when we initially entered into the entitlement program, direction from council was that we try to use existing plans that are within the city and identify existing programs or activities that the city is we're currently implementing at that time, and to identify where CDBG funds might be able to assist or implement some of those programs. So based on city council goals and objectives, city budget, capital improvements plan, looking at plans like Prosperity 2021, the Comprehensive Plan, our Bike Ped Master Plan, and other infrastructure master plans like Recreation Parks, Facilities Master Plan, and Stormwater Master Plan, we were able to identify different activities for which we can use our CDBG entitlement program. So over the past three years, these are some of the things that we've been able to accomplish with our CDBG program. Completed a significant portion of the Seminole Woods multi-use path, which was a commitment by council at the time to complete using CDBG funds. So far we've completed 3.5 miles of that. Last year we started a public service program where we were to provide recreational scholarships for summer camp, and we were able to assist 18 low-moderate income persons or low-moderate income children from households that qualify. And currently, we have 10 housing rehab projects, owner-occupied, that are underway. So just continuing with the items or activities that we've funded in the past, this is the proposed action plan for the upcoming year. Continuing on with the construction of the Seminole Woods multi-use path, again, what we do there is we purchase the materials and we use public works crews for the construction, and that allows the dollars to go much further. Again, continuing with the home repair, financial assistance, again, for owner-occupied units, and continuing with our public service program to provide recreational programs, scholarships, and again, setting aside some funds for planning and administration.
Let me interrupt you for a moment, because that planning administration number always seems remarkably high. Would you comment on why it's as high as it is?
It's actually much less, not to contradict you, Mayor, but the program allows up to 20% of the total allocation to be used for planning and admin. What you have here is we have about 5% for planning and admin, and it's typically there just to assist with the home repair. We hire our grants administrator to make sure that all the paperwork and all the boxes are checked.
That's the issue. The paperwork that has to go back to federal government is voluminous. We don't have the staff time or expertise, so we hire a consultant, and that's where that money goes.
Yes, sir. And we've been able to bring that number down from the beginning when we first initiated the program, where we had to make sure that we had the proper paperwork and make sure that we're meeting all the requirements so that we can annually go through this. We spent about 15% for admin. And as you can see, as the years have gone and the program has gone on somewhat on autopilot for some of these programs, we're able to reduce that planning and administration.
Jose, you, for the home repair part of it, I think you said we have 10 homes that we're rehabbing or in some fashion. Is that all we've got? Or if we use the money for some of the other things for more home repair, how many potential homes do we have in the city that could qualify for this? Because my understanding is the Community Development Block Grant, that's mainly what it was created for, was to stop areas that might become blighted from being that way, which to me is more important than any of these other things, although they're all good.
Right. I guess my answer would be that, again, it's a local decision how you want to diverse the money.
Historically, for the 10 homes that are currently under rehab, did we turn away another 10, another 20, another 5?
I'd have to get with both the day-to-day manager of the program.
There's always, with all of our programs, this is not the only home repair program. We also, with the county, have the SHIP program that has state funds. There's always more applicants than funding available. This last round, it was pretty much roofs and windows and, 25,000 to 30,000 a homeowner. So I think we probably had close to 18 applicants for, 10 spots. We'll open up the application period in January again, and once again, we'll probably have, between this year and last year, enough funding for 10 to 12 homes. So
funding based on this strategy.
Right. And last year's funding allocation as well.
So we do see that where we have more applicants than what we're funding for in this strategy.
Mm-hmm. And that's pretty typical of
housing
programs in general, no matter.
Well, it's always going to be more people who want it, but we have 100%, we have $100,000 more going to a bike path versus windows and roofs.
And if the object of this is to keep areas of the city from being blighted, that should be our highest priority, in my opinion.
One of the historical things, though, is in addition to housing, in fact, a major part of what this program was started up was infrastructure. You had neighborhoods that didn't have drinking water, didn't have sewer, those type of things. And this was always intended to help cities provide that basic infrastructure that help with the blighted conditions of really seriously poor areas. So you can have all the nice houses, but they don't have the infrastructure.
Yeah, but we're talking about a bike path.
It was
not a sure. Not water.
It was a direct result of that neighborhood's request and
well, there were people being killed riding on the road over there.
Right. So it was a direct request of a qualified neighborhood, because not all neighborhoods would qualify, and a priority of city council because of the issues that we have had along similar woods.
All I'm saying is that we advertise and take great pride in the appearance of our city. Mm-hmm. We spend a lot of money to do it. And when you talk about a community development block grant that's intended to prevent a neighborhood from being blighted, that should receive the highest priority than anything else, in my view.
Mr. Landon, to your point, in addition to the CDBG home improvement monies, their SHIP funds that are state funds, the 10 homes that are underway now, you know, are those exclusively CDBG, or is that meld in the SHIP funds?
Those are explicitly CDBG, and what we try to do working with Valerie Bradley County is put homeowners on those lists and even whatever funding is available to qualify them for. And just back to, you know, Jose, maybe want to share, you know, the Central Woods multi-use path, I think, is, because of other funding, is, you know, was a multi-year program, maybe ending shortly with CDBG funding.
Is this the last year?
We'll probably need one more year's allocation to complete the Sesame Boulevard portion of that bike path.
Where do we usually take money from for bike paths and stuff if it's not this?
Our capital dollars, so we would compete with all the other capital programs, such as our foundation kind of program.
Well, the important thing here is these dollars can be used to help private homes. Capital fund cannot.
Correct.
So that's why this has to be thought of a little differently, because this is money that can actually go to someone whose home is blighted and help repair that instead of, because we can't take the funds and give it to them from the general fund or the capital fund.
This is a priority. It's the city council, but I'm going to
just
always try to give other points of view. You put in windows and roof on an individual house, it benefits that individual. You build infrastructure that the whole neighborhood can use, it benefits the whole neighborhood.
Yeah, but you know, that flies against our code enforcement. So when we tell someone to keep their house up, we do that because it benefits the entire neighborhood.
Yep.
So it's a
That's why
it's a flip.
Any of those priorities are possibilities.
Are good, yeah. And they're all good.
There's the SHIP dollars are getting freed up again. For several years, the legislature raided the housing trust fund, you know, trust fund, and used those dollars for the general budget. And last year, they started allocating some dollars again, and this year, the number is more than last year. I think it's $100 million statewide or something like that. So we get it. I don't remember what that. I could send it to you what the number is because I have it in the email somewhere. It's $500,000-$700,000 between the city and the county, something somewhere in that range. So there are going to be dollars again for these types of housing programs. So it won't all fall back on this fund.
The other part of that was the neighborhood stabilization grants that we received, and we just wrapped those up here, which was a few. A couple million dollars worth of housing assistance that we put into our community. My only other comment on this is this was part of that five-year plan, you know, and so changing gears is possible. That's why we go through this every year. But the whole concept is to have that kind of long-term plan and then implement it each year. So. And you can always stop the PATH project, but normally what you would do is complete the project and then look at a five-year strategy again as to how you're going to spend the dollars.
Well, and the good news is, I think what Mr. Nobile is getting at, the Seminole Woods project maybe has a year to go. Mm-hmm. This CDBG entitlement grant goes on forever. We probably, and I don't know this for a fact, we probably don't have a lot of other qualifying neighborhoods where we have Seminole Woods multi-use path type projects. So it would seem to me that when that's done, we could transfer all or most of that money to the home improvement portion. Anyway.
Well, we've programmed our capital for some time already, so are there dollars beyond next year's Seminole Woods Path dollars going into capital? Block grant dollars are there? Block grant dollars that are allocated to other projects beyond Seminole Woods for infrastructure?
No.
Okay. And next year's would also, we still need that.
Next year, yes, sir.
To complete.
Right.
And then that's the end of the 5-year plan.
That should hopefully complete, barring some spike in construction materials or something.
Okay.
But then next year we will generate another 5-year plan. Is that correct?
Yeah. The year after.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
How much materials have we bought, Jose, for this multi-use path? Here's $250. What did we do last year?
I'd be guessing.
Guess?
Sure.
Your guess is better than mine.
Okay. If it's
500,000? Chris Quinn says 500,000 is its location.
Okay, so this is half. I'm just saying, because when you look at how long that path is, $250,000 just for the materials should get quite a few material out there. You're talking mostly blacktop, aren't you?
Concrete.
Okay.
And remember, the majority of the remaining portion of this path is coming through the TPO.
Right.
On Seminole Woods.
On Seminole Woods.
Yeah.
This is the Sesame Park?
This is the Sesame and Citation Park.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We still always just call it the Seminole Woods.
Right.
But it actually has that loop.
Any other questions? Nope. Any more presentation on that one?
Just as a wrap-up of what the next steps would be, we're here at City Council just to get some background on what public involvement we've had. We had a public hearing with the Citizens Advisory Task Force in June. The document was placed on our website and advertised for a 30-day public comment period, which ended July 18th. We're at Council workshop, so we'll set a public hearing date at the Council's recommendation for August 4th. And that allows us to meet our debt submission deadline to HUD, where we need to have this action plan submitted to HUD by August 15th in order to receive next year's allocation. And that concludes staff presentation.
Where is HUD? Where do you?
We send it to their regional office in Jacksonville.
Jacksonville?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Additional questions? Agenda item number 2, resolution approving an amendment to the lease with the Palm Coast Arts Foundation.
This is an ongoing program. The Arts Foundation eligible or has received another $150,000 grant. The state wants to make sure that their grant dollars are going to be there long term and has requested that we exercise a 10-year lease option and extend the lease for 10 years, so it would be a 2034. And so this action would do that. Staff obviously supports this and thinks that if they're going to get the grant dollars and make the improvements out there, they do need to be long-term, and so that's a health accomplish that.
It should be noted they're making significantly more headway over the past couple of years after the initial request to get some formal documents in place, which they said that's what they were going to be able to do, and they've been able to follow through on that.
Yep.
And, of course, the fail-safe, as with any lease, if they are not successful, the property and any improvements revert to the city. And then.
Right.
Okay. Agenda item number 3, a resolution related to the Old Kings Road special assessment role to be transmitted to the Flagler County Tax Collector.
This was a voluntary assessment to pay for the widening of Old Kings Road from State Road 100 to Palm Coast Parkway. It involves most of the property owners along there. It was all voluntary, agreed upon. And so each year this is just one of those steps we have to go through to send the formal request to the tax collector to make sure that they apply the assessment as per our agreement with just those property owners along Old Kings Road.
Questions?
When is tentatively we're going to widen Old Kings from where it is at the city entrance to city center to down to Palm Coast Parkway?
It's all development driven because the actual new development is going to pay for it. So as new development occurs, the new tax dollars from that development will go towards the improvements. So
the special assessment that's there, the people that are contributing, that money is like going into an escrow account?
Yes, it's a specific special account that we have.
Okay, and at what point in time will those funds be such that we can start looking to widen that road?
I don't have a dollar amount for you. It is intended to be phased. The next phase would be the bridge. So where it ends now, to get over the bridge, which is very costly, and actually get up to Hidden Lakes entrance. But right now, and when we go through budget, Chris can show you. I mean, we have very little dollars in there at this point. We're still...
Didn't we already approve some funds for some kind of renovation on that bridge, or was that just the pipes that run alongside it?
No, it was just recently, last 30, 60 days, completed some repair work caused by a storm, erosion, the embankment.
Was that injecting some kind of stuff into the crevices?
Right. But that was part of our maintenance dollars. That's not part of the actual improvement dollars.
There is activity in that corridor, so
sure.
Hopefully things will come along.
Mm-hmm. Knock on wood. Mm-hmm. I tend to believe that there's a synergy here with the other development that we're seeing down State Road 100, Island Walk. That gets other people's attention. They say, ooh, 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 we better get in on the good stuff. So, very, very optimistic. Agenda item number 4, resolution approving the final nuisance abatement assessment.
This is, part of that process that we have a citywide assessment district for anybody who did not take care of their property and the city had to use tax dollars to take care of it. You've already approved the preliminary list, and the idea with that list is to then send notices out to all those property owners, and if they disagree, and then some of them do, then they have the opportunity to present their case to us and say why they don't think they should be assessed. There are times when we find that we do eliminate. There's other times when we disagree and that they do owe the money. This is gone through that process the last 30 days. This would be the final assessment that we would then submit to the tax collector, so she places it on their property taxes for this coming year. If you have anybody that says that, well, this isn't right, have them contact Barbara and code enforcement, and we will look into it and pull all the records to see if it does need to be adjusted or if it is valid.
Has the Matanzas Woods golf course been part of this?
No, we have not actually spent any dollars where we've gone onto that property to maintain it. So they would not be part of it. This is when we actually go on the private property and spend money. Lots of times mowing and some fire mitigation, a few other things. Maybe if we require demolition and they didn't do it. So there's a variety of things that could be done. But McKenzie's with golf course, we have not been on the property. We've always tried to force them to maintain it.
Making any progress?
It's on the code board.
Next month. I asked this question last time when we had this workshop. Are these all from this year?
No.
Or from the past year, or however this time frame is?
This is part of cleaning up some of the older ones. This would be the last year of cleaning up. When we first got this started, we had so many, and we've been cleaning up some of the old ones.
You got to do the worst first.
Yes, and this is the last time for the historical cleanup. So from now on, hopefully, I've been told we should be able to just have the last year's work.
So what's our process then for a cleanup one that's several years old? Are we looking at ownership to make sure the ownership is the same as when the dollars were spent?
Yes. The
But they go in different categories. Okay. One of them is if you bought the property, went through a title, went through closing, did the typical. There are times when, from the time the title company did the search and they closed, we went out and mowed the property, then we attached the lien.
Sure.
And if it got caught into that, then we then write that off, because the property owner shouldn't be paying for that. They bought a clean piece of property with clear title, and the title company did what they were supposed to do, so it just happened to get into that transition plan. There are other people, particularly those that buy it on the courthouse steps, or the flippers, or the ones that buy it cheap. They don't go through a title company. They just buy it without doing their research. And some of them don't know that you're supposed to do a city lien research. And if they did that, then that was their risk, and we still require them to pay for that, because we had the proper lien on record, and they did not go through the proper steps to correct that at the time of closing.
You know, it just seems to me that if you're buying a piece of property on the courthouse steps, if you're buying on a tax lien, that should be a gigantic red flag that if they didn't pay their taxes, maybe we ought to check to see if they haven't paid something else. So,
the other thing,
you said the risk is on them.
There are times when we've seen the title company didn't do the proper lien searches.
Well, that's why you have title insurance.
That's right. Why it's called insurance, exactly.
Yeah. And in those cases, because we can tell whether, you know, we have a record as to whether or not you did the title, and we gave you what the lien is. And if the title company did not do that research, then we work with the property owner to get the money from the title company. And they almost always will pay that, because that is what title insurance is.
I think the important thing to note here is this is a notice. If there is a legitimate reason why a property owner thinks that they are not responsible, this is their opportunity to come to the city and state their case. It's not like we've got the gun to their head at this moment, but this opens a discussion if they feel a discussion is warranted.
Let me give you one other scenario we hear. So if anybody has this, they think this might be the case. We've had to change our process with receiving payment from title companies, because what we find is they'll write us one check for multiple reasons, and most commonly a utility bill that is owed. And so when it came in, the person who took it in applied it to the utility bill and did not break it out, because they didn't know it needed to be broken out, because it was just one check. We have since realized that was happening and changed our process to check to make sure that one check may have to go to different accounts. But obviously, if the title company paid it and we just applied it to the utility bill, then that's another one where we will obviously write it off.
So
there are times we write it off. There's other times we say, no, you owe it, you still owe it.
So you didn't really answer my question completely. When it's an older one, are we checking all of those things you just mentioned, the change of ownership, or are we sending it out and relying or frustrating possibly a new homeowner to have to work their way through the system?
We are sending it out because the thousands that you can see, not practical for it.
I'm talking on the cleanup ones, the ones that were our mistake. We should have had this done in previous years.
Well, I'm not going to say that it was our mistake.
Well, how do you have cleanup?
You have cleanup because of the backlog we had when we first got the program started. And setting priorities of the larger amounts first and then the smaller amounts at this point, the way I understand it. We have a confident in our system enough to know that there's only a handful that may fall in these categories. Most of them do not. Most of them, it's the same property owner and the owner. Most of them are absentee property owners. To put that amount of resources into it, they're just not there to be able to do that.
How many cleanups are there? What's previous?
I'm getting too many questions, guys. You're getting beyond my expertise here. So, Chris, you're going
to... Well, Chris is going to state the obvious. But what Jim's just described is the process that leads to what you do, what you're discussing today, which is this final assessment rule. When you vote on this resolution next week or whenever, I think it's next week, at that point in time, that's when these amounts that are due to the city to reimburse the taxpayers for the work that has been done to make these properties comply with code, it's added to their ad valorem taxes. So the next time they pay their tax bill, the city gets paid. Mm-hmm. Just want to make sure everyone for the audit, that's the purpose of this program. It's an efficient tool, arguably a little more straightforward and more efficient than your normal code enforcement process to make sure that properties do not become blighted and cause problems for their neighbors.
Right. This is, I believe, our fourth assessment role that we're looking at now. The first one, and forgive me, I don't remember the exact number, but it was just balances of $500 or greater, I believe, was the cutoff.
And why did we do that?
It was our very first one, and there was such a huge volume of these. Okay. You know, it was our first work through. And the total roll was about $60,000 that first year, $60,000. The second year, it was like, okay, now that we got one under our belt, let's go to $300 and greater at that point. So we only picked up the accounts at that point that had $300 or greater on the second roll. And then the third roll was another notch down, and now this one is whatever's out there. So that's essentially how the process went at that time. So, you know, there are some old things out there because the person might have only had $100, you know, code charge out there from 2011 and never got picked up in those last three. I maybe had another one since then, or another two since then. So that's kind of the...
I understand that it's important to collect the money from the person because we don't need to have the rest of the citizens subsidizing this person that can't mow their lawn or take care of their property or whatever it is. I get all that. But going backwards several years, I'm not terribly comfortable with. I understand the point, but can you imagine you're a homeowner... And I'd say we've had a lot of turnover in the city. There's going to be some that were turned over, and you're going to get this thing. You're not going to know what to do with it. You're not even going to know what it is. Until we changed the language last year, you couldn't even really read it, honestly. And then you have to go through, okay, I'm a two-working family. I got to figure out how to get down to the city, how to figure out what to do with this thing. I understand, you know, the past year, and because you're going to be familiar with it, but I'm not crazy about going.
This is kind of the last bunch of those.
And I asked this question, and I was told yes, that this was just the previous year at the last workshop.
No.
Maybe my question was misunderstood, but...
Yeah. No. It's more than just the last previous year.
What is it? Is this the end of the cleanup?
As I understand it, this is the end of the cleanup. Okay. And then going forward at this point, it would just be anything that happened in the last year.
And if I misstated last time, I may have been the person. I apologize for that. They've corrected me since.
Well,
I can't remember.
Well, because I had a citizen come to me and say, I just got a bill from 2010.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been three owners in between or something like that. Yeah.
Well, that certainly,
no, that was fixed.
That does create a problem if you're a new owner. But also, not everybody is a new owner. Some of these cleanups are the existing owner, and it's not although this shouldn't come as a surprise. They've been billed initially. They knew they owed the money. They just didn't get around to paying it. In your case, where there's been a change of ownership, yes. And that's why I hope the notice that we're sending out is sufficiently benign in tone that we don't overly offend somebody. I mean, you're going to be offended regardless, but... Mm-hmm. This is your opportunity to explain.
And then if they didn't use title insurance, that's their own problem. I don't.
Right.
That's not our problem. That's their problem. But
you should be talking about a very minimal amount because during this whole time, you know, back to 2011, 2010, whatever, if they sold the property, then at that time we get paid at closing.
Right.
So that is why there's only very...
If they went through the title process.
If they went through the title process. So... There are very few people who bought property that a previous owner owed us money that they got this notice. But there are a few, and those are the ones that are going, whoa, where did this come from? And so those are the ones. But you see the very long list?
Yeah.
vast majority of those are people who own the property at the time, still own the property, and the rest of the taxpayers pay for some kind of a cleanup or improvement on their property.
So it sounds like the only real problem is that one scenario where we caught them in between. Everything else is because they didn't do a title search or the title company didn't catch it.
Or we got the check and we applied it to the utility bill. That was the second one that's on us.
Okay, but which is going to go away.
Two or three of those.
All right. So,
but to Jason's point, this is the last year that we should be facing this kind of issue.
And we, once again, should not have very many of these we face because it gets taken care of at the time.
They naturally clean themselves up.
Yes. Right. Yes, exactly.
If you go through the typical property acquisition process.
Right. But you also have to keep in mind, even when we're only looking back a year, when we start this list, there are property transactions happening every day.
Yes.
Someone is going to get a letter next year that just bought the house in the last month that it's not there. You know, it's always going to be that delay for when stuff gets recorded and when we find out about it. And
even if the repairs were done in the last 12 months.
Even if the repairs were done in 12 months. So that issue will always be a few of those, just because of that, the timing issues.
Right. Additional questions? Agenda item number 5 is a presentation on the fiscal year general fund budget. It has been suggested to me by several folks that we might want to change our agenda and go through F, G, H, and I, or F, G, and H, before we do the budget presentation. Council, do you have any feelings one way or the other? Council comments first, city attorney, city manager, and then go back and do the budget?
So the city attorney can relieve him? Is that
I'm here.
We're stuck with him for the day. I mean, we've got him for the day.
Yeah. There's, I suggest it because historically there's a tendency of people not staying around for the full discussion on budget and want to hear this, but that's up to you.
Council, any feeling one way or the other?
I don't care. I don't care. Matter to me.
Fine.
With the
I don't care which how you do it.
All right. Well, let's do the budget presentation last, so that if people want to hear council comments and attorney and manager, they can. And then if the budget becomes too extraordinarily boring, they can leave. All right. So with council concurrence, we will change our agenda and go to agenda item number F: discussion by city council of matters not on the agenda. Ms. Shipley, why don't we start with you, ma'am?
Well, I think I'm going to repropose what I said at the last workshop about the Arts Foundation. Is this the one you wanted? Is the meeting that I could say that?
Yeah, it will actually be part of the general fund budget as part of that discussion with cultural arts grants, and then we'll also have the capital, which is later on.
So I should just wait till they do the budget. Yeah,
that's probably easier. Yep. Anything, Mr. McGuire?
No, sir.
Mr. Nobile?
No.
I have two questions. Questions that were raised me by a couple of people. As you drive along Palm Coast Parkway in the overpass over I-95, you've got the tall fence with the curved restriction at the top. That's so you don't jump down onto 95 and damage a car or a truck. But on the southbound side, from where the tall fencing ends, there is a lower fencing that keeps you from tumbling down the embankment, I guess. On the northbound side, you've got the tall fence over 95, but you don't have the similar lower fencing. And I'm wondering, is it going to be installed, or is it not going to be installed? Anybody know?
Steve, can you see if Carl is listening and can come answer that very quickly? I think we've all noticed the same issue. We'll see what you get.
I've had a couple of people ask me, I can fall down on one side, but I'm not supposed to fall down the other side. And
if we can't get it for you right now, we'll get it for you.
Okay. And speaking of falling down the embankment, I don't know if the attorney was going to cover this or not, but there are a couple of lawsuits involving the city. I wonder if we could have an update. One involved an alleged falling down embankment.
So discovery has been taken on that lawsuit. It is pending. This was, of course, a lawsuit that's being defended by your insurance carrier. There has not been settlement discussions. No mediation is set, nor is trial set.
I think we need to clarify. You're talking about the lawsuit filed by Dennis and Janet McDonald?
That's
yes.
Correct.
That's the one I'm referring to.
Falling down the embankment.
Correct. And there was a. And I assume that's the one that you were asking about, Mr. Mayor.
Well, I'm asking about both because there's another lawsuit involving the same party, or if not a lawsuit, there's another judgment.
Okay. As to both of those issues, the first one is pending, which is not unusual for that type of lawsuit because our law firm is representing the city and we're doing our
Several weeks ago, a month ago, 2 months ago, I was told there had been a deposition taken from one of the parties.
That's correct. Mrs. McDonald's deposition was taken. She was asked questions about the incident as well as the injuries, the alleged injuries. And that deposition has been transcribed and actually this week has been provided to the city so that it will be available for you to review should you wish to review her testimony. Obviously, we're going to be taking a deposition of Mr. McDonald, who is the party who allegedly fell down and injured himself. This was not over 95. He did not fall into 95. I'll make sure that's very clear.
More damage than any vehicles.
That's right. It's a separate location. And the other matter you refer to...
Is it on the docket somewhere, Mr. Reichman?
Yes, it is. It's a lawsuit that's been filed. Mr. McDonald and his wife have sued the city for personal injuries arising out of the alleged city's negligence in the maintenance of a sidewalk.
Where would that likely to be heard here?
It would be heard in Flagler County. It's in the state courts in Flagler County.
All right.
Yes. If it gets to that point with the trial.
But it is on the docket of one of the judges out there, then?
Well, it's not on a trial docket. I guess let me be very specific. It has been filed. It has been assigned to a judge. But it has not been yet scheduled for trial. So when you say it's on a docket, I just want to be precise. When a matter is actually scheduled to be heard at a specific time for the trial of those issues, then it's called on a trial docket. We're not there yet. One of the parties has to request the trial coordinator to schedule a matter to be heard by a judge or a jury to be on the trial docket. And we're just not at that stage yet.
Okay.
Neither the plaintiffs, attorney, nor we have... believe that the matter is ready for that next step. Normally what happens is you complete the discovery. And the only discovery that I'm aware of are some interrogatories, which are written questions, as well as the deposition of Mrs. McDonald. I can anticipate that there would be further discovery done by Mr. and Mrs. McDonald, potentially some requests to produce, potentially some depositions of some city workers, and of course we will need to take the deposition of Mr. McDonald. At that point in time, the court may and likely would order a mediation, which is not something that the city nor Mr. McDonald and his wife would have the ability to refuse. That can be a court order. And if the matter still remains unresolved after mediation, then it would be appropriate and it would likely be set for trial. Now, as to the other matter, this was the one where there was a final judgment against Mr. McDonald and his attorney by a judge, finding that a prior lawsuit filed by Mr. McDonald through his attorney was unwarranted, did not suffice to meet the standards, and was found to be spurious. And based upon that, in Florida law, a judgment was entered against Mr. McDonald and his attorney for an amount of money which represented the cost and the attorney's fees that the city incurred in having to defend against that frivolous lawsuit. The city has just recently received a check from a title company, which has been placed in escrow and will be dispersed this week to the city, representing payment in full plus interest by Mr. McDonald of the amounts of his portion of the amounts that were due to the city based upon their prior court's ruling. So, based upon that final judgment, you know, once that title company's check clears, and we need to make sure that it does before we disperse. We assume that it will, but we're going to be careful.
Well, it should be.
It's a little over $9,000.
Correct.
It was the $8,000 plus interest.
What about the rest? Because as I recall, it cost the city about $17,000 to litigate this. Okay, you've accounted for nine.
It was one half of it was from Mr. McDonald, and the other half was from his attorney, Mr. Knight. That matter has previously been resolved. Mr. Knight's father came in and paid his portion of that final judgment.
So when the check clears, from the title company, that issue is
It's resolved, done. And there would be a satisfaction of that final judgment,
okay.
Of the amounts that the court previously found to be due to the city for its attorney's fees and court costs.
So if all of this adds up to less than $17,000, then the city taxpayers will pick up the difference.
Correct. $18.99
is yes. Will and have, and yeah.
Yes. Yeah. This is reimbursement. The city tax, I mean, those funds were expended. I mean, the city defended itself, and it paid money to its attorneys, and it has some court costs. The court found that that was inappropriate, that the taxpayer should have to pay that. And so the court ordered the people that the court found to be responsible for that inappropriate expenditure to have to pay that. That's called a final judgment, obviously. But it wasn't joint several. It's not like Mr. McDonald owed all of it. The court specifically found, consistent with the statute, that he was responsible for half. He's paid that. And the other party was Mr. Knight, Mr. McDonald's attorney. And his father stepped in and paid a portion of that. He resolved a portion of that.
The numbers, Mr. McGuire, is $9,000 from Mr. McDonald, $5,000 from the attorney, which was a settlement agreement. The reason we did that is because his attorney had no assets. And his father literally stepped up and said that if you will accept this, which if we hadn't, we weren't going to get anything because there were no assets to attach. The McDonald's did have assets, and our legal team went through the steps. So it cost us some money to collect, but add it all up, we received reimbursement of about $14,000.
Well, between $14,000 and $15,000.
The court said it was appropriate for $18,000, so we got a majority of that. We did spend some money on the collection from Mr. McDonald. Overall, though, is a whole lot better than the taxpayers paying the full $20,000.
I understand that, Mr. Lannan, but at the end of the day, the taxpayers shouldn't have to pay anything, and we are.
Yeah, it's our system where anybody can sue you, whether that's appropriate or not, is, and we have to defend it, and that's what happened here. Yes, it is kind of sad.
And just putting this into perspective, it is not uncommon for cities or parties being sued to say, well, I'll offer you a settlement in lieu of having to spend money on attorneys. That happens very commonly in government, where a government will just say, well, if you'll take $5,000 instead of $20,000, we'll call it quits. We chose not to do that. And I think that was a wise move, because that tends to promote the idea that government is a source of free money. So I think we're better off than we might have been had we followed the somewhat typical path of, well, let's settle.
I'm not criticizing our legal team in any way, shape, or form. I just think that it's a sad day when you take taxpayers' money and just throw it away.
Believe me.
In fact, I would compliment our legal team because this would have been easy to go a different direction. So I think they did a great job. But yes, it's and I was actually going to comment on this too, from a little different perspective, so we'll get there, about how sad this one really is.
Discussion by city attorney of matters. Not only
you're waiting for Carl.
Oh, all right. Oh, yes.
Carl.
See Carl.
Carl, we don't have
good fences make good neighbors. Are we getting a fence on the south side? The question is, if you look at the I-95 overpass, yes. Bonne Coast Parkway, where you are directly over the highway, you've got a tall fence with a curved or recurve. But then, where you go over the embankment, there's a lower fence, that aluminum pseudo-wrought iron, on the north side. You have a similar topography on the south side. You've got the tall fence over 95, but there's no fence along the embankment.
It's coming.
Okay, that's the question.
The south side is finished, the north side is not quite there yet.
Okay.
They had to fabricate some of that stuff.
Okay, I was wondering if you're allowed to jump off the one side but not the other. It just didn't make a lot of sense. Okay, thank you.
I have a question now. The construction area that's right at the northbound exit, kind of that area where they're using to mobilize, it's really messy. Can
can we have a conversation with them about cleaning up that area? I know they're trying to get done and everything, but it's like really messy over there.
Where the sand piles are?
There's junk and, yeah, there's, you know, debris.
I'm talking to George Johnson.
Okay. Yeah. I heard him. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Discussion by city manager of matters not on the agenda.
He's right.
No, it is.
What do you ask?
I actually, was going to talk about Island Walk. They made a major announcement this past week. And why it's tied into the frivolous lawsuit is that's what we were sued over, was trying to prevent Island Walk from making the improvements that they're doing. So I think it's kind of ironic that lawsuit has been settled in our favor, while the community is, I think, very excited about what they're seeing in Island Walk. And it's one of those that we talked about what a major impact that was going to have on us. But for those that haven't heard, they did a little news release, the owner of the property, that they're 80-85% leased out, which is really good news at this stage. They have a variety of new tenants, some restaurants. Metro Diner has got a lot of people's attention. I've never been to one, but I guess it's out of Jacksonville and St. Augustine, very, 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 very popular. Thai by Thai, they've announced, is coming back, which is local, is a big deal.
It's probably the best Thai restaurant you've ever eaten.
They had to close, and now they're coming back.
And that was, they said they were going to come back, and they're actually going to move into where Salsa is. That's interesting. Salsa's going to move into the in-unit, right next door to where they are, in the new portion, and then they're going to remodel and put tie by tie in where Salsa is. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yep.
Mexican restaurant.
Yep.
Petco has announced, Hobby Lobby has announced some time ago.
Leslie's Pool Supply.
Leslie Pool Supply.
Craft Beer Place.
Another restaurant, Brass Tap.
Yeah.
Tuesday morning, which I've seen in other communities and is lots of times very popular, kind of a different type of approach. Chase Bank is going to be out on Palm Coast Parkway. Nobody gets excited about that. I understand that. But another mattress store. You can get it now.
just in time.
I'm sure in some of the businesses, the dental, the eye place, the UPS, they're going to stay there. So very, very positive. They still appear to be on target for the new Publix opening in November. So all of this happening, I think it's extremely positive.
Yeah, I was talking to an economic development guru the other day, and her point of view was that in any shopping center like this, 90% tenant occupancy is considered excellent. They're at 84% and not even open yet. I think that's
right.
This is going to be great.
A lot of buzz out in the community, and it's still ironic that this is where we got sued and tried to stop.
And there's a lot of buzz out in the community that needs to be addressed by stating publicly that the city doesn't get a vote on what businesses go in. How come you're putting this in? Why don't we have one of these?
Yes.
We already got one of those. We don't get a vote. It's private property.
Private property rights. Absolutely.
And what I always tell people is they vote every day where they go in and shop. How that works. A couple other things. This is one that we talk about our long-term plans. Royal Palms improvements are complete, totally complete, punch list, etc. The last phase, just a couple of weeks ago, they wrapped it up. But what's I like to stress is that this actually got started back in 2007 is when we did the first phase. You didn't used to be able to get all the way over to Old Kings Road from US 1, because that was part of it. The section that goes through the town center was actually done by a developer. Used city tax dollars to improve from where they extended it to all the way to US 1. Much safer now with shoulders and turn lanes, etc. So
nice to see a long-term project kind of come together and be totally complete. My last item was legislative priorities. I think it was yesterday. Yes, it was yesterday. Bo sent you out basically what we've done in the past and for discussion today. What this is used for is a couple of things. One of them is the Northeast Regional
Council. Northeast Regional Council compiles the legislative priorities from the seven member counties. They publish a binder that is made available to the counties, and then they publish basically a rack card summarizing these things. And the purpose of these documents is to aid us when we go to Tallahassee on Legislative Action Day, when we speak with our legislators and say, here are the things that are important to us. What we've done is submitted our priorities to the county. The county has, in some cases, incorporated our priorities into theirs. In some cases, they haven't. But as a member of the legislative committee of the regional council, I always be sure that ours get on the table also for at least consideration in the overall document. Right. But now we have to decide what is it that's most, what would we like our legislature to do most in the coming year? Go home is not an option, I guess so.
What we worked on hard last year was trying to continue to get some grant dollars in here for our water, wastewater projects, and hope that that would stay on there with all our infrastructure needs. We have kind of a general one we've always said in the past is we quit messing with local funding, you know, deal with state funding, but don't try to...
Be a hero with our money.
Yes. Business tax receipts was kind of in that category, but more importantly for us, the dollars aren't as important as the actual registration, particularly with our contractors, et cetera, so that when we have problem with local businesses, or residents have problem with local businesses, they have the benefit of us being able to track those businesses down. Communication service tax is another one that the communication, better known as phone companies, always lobby to try to get reduced. The state reduced that this past year for the state amount, but not local amount. I personally think you probably can take that one off. I don't know that one is a major deal in Tallahassee right now. The last two are the two new ones that came up this past year. One of them is a little cottage industry that is out there in Florida of people submitting just generic open record requests, and if they aren't followed exactly to the T of the state law, then they sue, and then they always settle. You know, for $5,000, we will settle if you pursue this. Legally, it's going to cost you a whole lot more than that, including the other side's attorney fees if you lose. What has happened on this one is that private contractors who get public bids have been targeted also. And the private contractors don't realize that when someone says, I want to see your invoice from the porta-potty company, that you actually have to, if it's been charged to that project, then you've got to send this person the bill for the porta-potty company, something that bizarre. Well, you can see where the private sector looks at that and go, you know, is this serious? And many of them have ignored it, and they get sued because they didn't provide that record. What we think we're all requesting is not to limit what the public can have. It's all public records. They should have it. But to do a couple of things before you can sue an entity. And one of them is file the request with the appropriate party. In this case, it would be our city clerk. And secondly, give us 3 days to fulfill it before you have the right to sue. And don't think that's unreasonable that, you know, before you sue us, you've got to make sure that we have the request and that we get 3 days to fill it before you can to the entity. That's basically what we've been asking for with cities.
And right now it's 24 hours?
No, it's a reasonable time. I think what the 3 days would be that you put us on notice that if we don't get this within 3 days, we're going to sue you. Most people wouldn't do that.
Can I jump in?
Yes, please.
What started out as as Jim indicated, is a very worthwhile objective, and that is to make the state of Florida open in its meetings and also in its records to the public. Everyone agrees with that. But the way that the law has been used and arguably abused is that and this is how it works. In the state of Florida, if you want to come in for a public record, you can go in really to any city employee or governmental employee. You don't have to give your name. You don't have to put anything in writing. You don't have to fill anything out. You can ask for that document, that record. And that's fine. And the local government has the right to has the obligation to respond to that as Jim said in a reasonable period of time. Now, if you're asking for one document and the individual who's responsible for that document is the person who received the request, should be provided immediately. But sometimes you'll get these requests and they're looking for miscellaneous documents or a very vague description of documents for the last 10 years. Well, you can't just provide that to them in 10 minutes. And some of you may be aware of this, local governments are under the obligation to redact certain privileged or exempt information from public records and get in trouble if you don't redact it with the people that or the information that is supposed to be kept privileged and confidential. So there's some documents where you have to have staff people go through them to redact this exempt information. But what was happening is that instead of folks going to the city clerk or the county clerk and asking for public records, they would go during the lunchtime to someone in one of the out offices of the city of Palm Coast or the city of St. Augustine or the city of Orlando and ask for a document. And so what cities did is they made sure that they trained every city employee who has any contact with any member of the public about how to deal with public records requests. Fair enough. But then what's happened is our people started realizing that they could go to private contractors who do business with local governments and do the same thing. Well, cities can't tell private contractors to train every one of their employees to deal with public records requests. And so what's happening is the process, and that's what Jim referred to. You can still go and ask for the documents. You don't have to give your name, you don't have to put it in writing. But before you go and sue, you have to at least give at least that's what this proposal is, to try to use common sense. If you really want the document, let us know. We'll get it to you. But see, there's a prevailing party attorney's fees. If someone has to, right now under the current law, if you sue and the court finds that the city or the local government didn't comply with public records law, then that individual, that public private person, gets their attorney's fees. Well, you can see how that's been taken advantage of, and this little cottage industry has been created. So I just felt it was necessary to kind of give a little context.
So we are just, this is something that's going through the Florida League of Cities and actually some of the private entities, and we just suggesting that we all need to support avoiding these frivolous lawsuits, not reduce the availability of public records, but reduce the chances of being sued.
Reduce some attorneys.
Yep.
Free money.
The last one is...
Talk about throwing taxpayer dollars away.
The last one is we have private utilities who are in public right-of-way, basically city property. And historically, whenever we widen a street, we relocate one of our utility lines, the private utility has to relocate their lines to get it out of the way for that construction. The concept behind that, particularly here in Palm Coast, where we have no franchise fee, those private utilities are using that property free. And so the concept is if you're going to use a public property free, that it shouldn't cost taxpayers when it needs to be relocated.
Okay.
Particularly because many of the services now are not offered or not being used by all the residents. So, you know, not everybody has Bright House now. Not everybody has AT&T. But with the taxpayers are going to have to pay for them to relocate their line, everybody has to pay for that company to relocate their line. You can see where the utility companies want us to pay for this, the taxpayers to pay for it. But This came up last year. The cities and counties fought it hard because you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars statewide. These are big dollars. We're proposing that we continue to support the rest of the cities and counties and trying to make sure that if you're going to use our property basically for free, that that costs the taxpayers money.
The legislature passed a bill like that would be complete disregard for the citizens. Complete disregard. Yeah. Because there's only one person that wins.
Yep.
That's the utility.
Yeah, but it's... Utilities, the amount of
look at the statistics as to what the utility companies pay in lobbying fees each year in Tallahassee. It will boggle your mind.
No, we're not talking about public utilities. We're about private utilities. That's the important distinction.
So we those last two, the public record lawsuits and the utility relocation, and the first one, water wastewater funding. Those are the ones that we worked the hardest last year and still have opportunity this year. We encourage you to really put those on the top of your top three list, but really up to you.
We still have the same lobbyist?
Yes. Yeah, very, very pleased with this.
Yes, effort. But with a different firm.
Yes, right. But Doug Bell, he made a presentation to you. We'll do that again. This in between sessions again this year. I'm not sure when that's scheduled, but he's changed firms, but he also works closely with the league and has been very, very helpful to us.
Is that it? Okay, now then, according to our revised agenda, we are ready for the presentation of fiscal year 2016 preliminary general fund budget.
Mayor, I say this is it. Is you have consensus to put it together with those three as being the top three? Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
Any objection to that as forward on with those being the top three? Okay. Thank you.
Hey, you like that? Which one are they?
That's good. From our point of view, vodka might be preferable.
I prefer coffee, but I'm trying to limit myself, so...
On the supporting documents for this that we're going to use on the budget page on the website, which documents will we be using? You emailed them to us a couple weeks ago, but
those
we got...
are the general fund departments.
So is it the preliminary general fund budget overview from 7/14?
He's looking at the website.
Do I need to go find that email?
No, and you're talking about the link that we had sent you.
Yes.
Have you updated the overall since the 14th? Probably.
Yes.
There's one that says maximum millage rate budget presentation, but I assume that's going to be actually this. No? Oh, no, we're at the preliminary.
Yeah, the maximum millage rate presentation was kind of a condensed version.
Do me a favor. Go to our website.
Is that you gave us supporting documents in a link that said we're going to use to go along with this presentation.
Yes.
Do I need to go find that link?
Only if you want to look at those supporting documents. We do have them available, so if you wanted us to pull one up during the discussion, we can pull it up.
Okay.
And then which one is... He's not talking about this, Jim. He's talking about the link we sent with our worksheets, our detailed budget worksheets.
Oh, it is. So it's not...
It's not here on the website.
Okay.
Do you have it?
We have them available for discussion if we need to. We can bring them up during this meeting.
So it's not on there?
It's not.
Okay. Not because they were preliminary, they're not finalized.
Right.
All set? All right. Well, good morning. And I just want to say I don't take any offense to the comment about the budget being boring. This is our budget preparation timeline. I hope you're not tired of seeing Chris and I just yet. We still have a couple more months to get through. But as you know, in January and February, we went over our financial audit, what was our first quarter review. April, May, and June, we've gone over a series of presentations with the City Council that I hope you found helpful to prepare for the budget workshops. We just recently, at last week's business meeting, adopted the maximum millage rate that will be going out on interim notices in the next month. And departments are currently going through their third quarter review. We're here today to go over the general fund budget with you.
So before we get started, just to tag along with what Jason had mentioned earlier. So up to this point, what's kind of happened internally is that starting in about April timeframe, the departments went ahead, took the strategic action plan as well as the new action plan items that were approved by City Council and prepared their budgets. Those budgets are prepared, requests are made, they're forwarded through Lena in the budget area, and then we sit down and we have what we call red pen meetings with the city manager. So,
that's what they call.
And then after the city manager takes his
red
pen.
Which one gets a red pen?
He gets a red pen. So we have kind of lengthy individual discussions with the divisions and departments about their budgets and the directions that they're going in. And kind of come down to the proposed budgets that we're going to look at today, the details of which are on that link that we talked about, that Jason had mentioned I sent out earlier. We'll continue to put those detailed sheets there because what we see here on the slides are a summarized version of those detailed sheets, and that's kind of where we are today. So this should look kind of familiar. There's been a few tweaks to it since we looked at it a couple of weeks ago. But this is the first column is the 2015 current budget. Second column is the 2016 proposed in total for the general fund. We talked about the kind of construction management engineering consolidation that's taken place and the effect on the general fund. And when we factor out that effect, the overall general fund is going up, proposed right now, a little over $480,000 or 1.7% from the 2015 budget. From a personnel standpoint, when you last saw this, we were at an increase of 4.5 folks, which was the recreation supervisor, some people in parks and facilities maintenance, and a staff assistant. The recreation department is also looking to add some additional part-time hours. When we didn't really have that included in here. We did mention that there's some part-time additional staffing. So what we did was we boiled it down to it's about the equivalent of two full-time employees, all of the additional part-time employees that are being requested in the Parks and Recreation Department. Of course, the part-time employees don't get benefits or anything like that, but we just took the total dollars that was related to those part-time requests, divided it by the full-time hours, and it's approximately the equivalent of the salary of two full-time employees.
And in our initial presentation to you, Council, we did include those dollars that were budgeted for the additional staffing, but Chris and I felt like we really wanted to show that impact as it relates to our FTE. So it hasn't changed the dollar amount of that department's budget. We just have addressed it basically on that portion of the slide for FTEs.
Aren't our firefighters part of the general fund budget?
They are.
So you're not envisioning any change in personnel in our firefighters?
Right now there is not any change in personnel. The very bottom line, or towards the bottom, we have our original 2015, again, budget for the general fund that was approved last year. Our estimated actual, where we think we're actually going to come in, it's about $187,000 higher than the original, and that's primarily due to the grants that we received, the FEMA grant and the education grant. Those were not budgeted for the current year, and they had associated expenditures that went along with them.
Okay, so that asterisk for the FEMA grant is not related to the asterisk for the personnel.
Correct.
Good.
Sorry, yeah, two different asterisks. Sorry. We should have done two. We'll
you did,
that.
But you just to follow up down at the bottom those have to.
We'll definitely correct
this.
That.
It has to do with.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. I just don't like grant dollars going to personnel.
Right.
Going
right.
Where?
Personnel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, is it why? Because after 2 years, and then you pay full ride, right? Yeah. Happened to a lot of cities.
And New York City was famous for
that.
You know, while we're having that budget discussion, it's always been the city's policy, city council's policy, that our grant dollars go into the grant program to actually do the stuff of the grant, that we don't utilize it to pay for existing employees or there are administrative expenses where we have to hire consultants and things like that, like Bo and Jose had talked about the housing consultants, and we would use a portion of the grants to cover those kind of things, but we don't ever use our internal people to absorb those grant dollars, and we haven't up to this point.
Or overhead. because of that point is that once the grant dollars go away, you still have that, and it's just not good practice to...
Don't use one-time dollars for ongoing expenses.
Exactly.
Right. We tend to take those dollars and we plug them directly into the cost of the project. So.
Why aren't our accounting, isn't our accounting department part of administration?
It is. It's the last financial services.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Part of that. Yep.
We save the best for last.
Put yourself right next to you.
I've been hanging out with Chris for too long. I'm sorry.
So in the administration department, again, this includes city council, city manager, communications and marketing, purchasing contracts, risk management, city clerk, human resources, outrageous city attorney fees, and the finance. So our 2015 budget is a little over $3.1 million. The proposed, $3.3 million. We're going to look at each one of those individually. This is just a summary of all of those administrative departments. A 7.5% increase in those budgets year to year. There is one full-time person being requested in the risk management and contracts area for next year. And for the current fiscal year, that should say 2015 budget. There's another one there. The 3106, that should say 2015 budget on the bottom line left column, $3.106 million, compared to what we think our actual expenses are going to be, which are a little under $3.1 million. I'm going to come about a little bit more than $25,000 and under budget is our projection right now. And we'll talk about where that's coming into play and on the future slides. The city council, 15 versus 16, there's an increase of about a little over $10,000. This is related to our change in our methodology for our...
I'm looking forward to this slide.
change in methodology of how we do our IT allocation. We came up with a kind of a better methodology for it this coming year, where we direct charge the department for IT expenses that are related directly to that department or division, and then the remaining costs of the IT function are split up over each of the remaining departments and divisions based on the number of...
So what you're telling me is the city council is not getting a 10% raise.
That's correct. Oh. There are no increases in city council salaries.
Oh, man, it's already spent.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's the problem.
It's just not to give you a big convoluted answer, but we changed the way that we did it. Some departments benefited, some departments did not. In the city council's case, part of the city council's previous allocation was actually absorbed by the city manager's budget. The general fund as a whole really hasn't changed. It's just changed as to who's paying what portion of it based on the new allocation.
This is something that Chris and Lena worked on, because what would happen, the department said, ask them, well, tell me why I'm getting, hey, go away, because that's just what it is. So they now have a formula, and somebody wants to know why their IT allocation is based on actual tangible numbers, how many computers, how many whatevers. So this year will be a transition year where you'll see some numbers that makes no sense, but it's to really reflect reality a lot more.
But are you telling me that IT support for the five of us is going up $10,000 from what we were paying before?
Yes,
because you were being subsidized.
It takes $2,000 to support me? To multiply that by the rest of everybody else.
You're expensive.
It's what we call high maintenance.
Well, did you buy that?
New equipment.
No. And I got a new one this year as well.
It's not just
the... But really, my other one was not white. It was the original one.
Jason, that's called cross-examination.
It's kind of reverse. It's the equipment, it's the software, it's the phone system, it's our internet, it's our server, report of the server room, the people, the overhead, everything that relates to IT.
Software used for agenda items.
Fancy
projector. Expenses that you reimburse us for. Mileage and what have you.
That's not really related to the IT allocation. That's not related to the IT allocation.
The increase is talking about, not the budget.
Yeah, I understand, but when I look
it is included in those numbers. Yeah.
The bottom line is that there is no changes in city council other than that formula has changed.
No, but less than half of your expenditures are what we actually get paid with our exorbitant salaries.
Right.
So I just find it hard to believe that, that there's that much expenditure once you take away the salary that the city council disperses. But if you say we're...
Your training, the conferences you go to.
Memberships.
Your IT allocation total is 16,000. You got the Florida League of Cities membership, National League of Cities membership, miscellaneous operation is about $500. I mean, you know, it's just, there's not a whole lot here, not a whole lot of changes.
And there's no breakout for city council in the sheet?
There is.
Yeah. Oh, there is? I don't see.
There is one, yeah. I don't
have that. And there's our health insurance and all that stuff. Right?
You wish.
I don't see a...
I do.
I do.
So do I. Compared to the county?
In that link.
I'm talking about the link, and not the link on the...
There should be. If it's not...
No, it's not here.
Okay, we'll get it in there.
Oh, it's not in there?
I don't see it. Jason doesn't see it.
That it's not there.
Let's see, there we go. Is that it? No, agenda.
I'm looking for the other folder. The folder that's agenda and another.
It's downloads, budget, general.
You all want to
just send it to us.
Yeah, not right this second, but yeah.
And I can, I'll send it to you right now. You
yeah, that's good.
Go ahead.
Okay. I apologize.
What? It should definitely.
I can pop it up on the screen if you want to see it up on the screen.
No, just want to see it at some point.
Okay. You should all have it. Okay.
If you can just get it in that link area, that'd be better. So we get it all in one place.
We'll just make sure it's in there. City Manager's Office. City Manager's Office is one of the departments that benefited a little bit from the IT allocation, partly because the City Council, City Manager's Office allocation was kind of mixed. Really, there's very little change year to year to this particular budget. It went down slightly. And then for fiscal year 15, we're actually going to be, looks like we're going to be over budget by about $277 with the estimate. Based on our current expenses in this particular area. Sorry, did you go back, Lena? I think it's important to note here that this number does not represent the city manager's salary. We have a lot of those discussions. There are other personnel in the city manager's office. This is the executive assistant, the staff assistant. And the city manager's salary in actuality hasn't changed in years, contrary to public belief. These numbers might look slightly different than what you saw last time. We're continuing to refine, you know, the numbers as we get through. We get some official final numbers from our different vendors for next year. But this is where we are right now.
So the only change in the 16 budget will be a decrease in the
slight decrease. Yeah, mostly related to the IT, correct? Is what decreases. Yeah.
So our increase is his decrease.
Essentially.
Sort of.
You're going to see that throughout.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds fair.
The bottom line is that this does not represent changes in the budget total.
Right,
this
right.
is internal.
Right.
Yeah. When we redid the allocation formula, the first thing we checked was, okay, does this change in total by fund? And the fund total did not change.
Chris, what's the head count in this budget?
Two and a half.
Okay.
Who's got the half a head?
That would be Sharon. Sharon. Okay. Communications and marketing. This is the department that, of course, Cindy does all her work out of, but also our video folks and Jason are included in this particular budget. Change of about 4.4%, or a little over 15,000 proposed for fiscal year 16. Fiscal year 15, we're coming in a little over $6,000 over the original budget. This has to do with the disaster preparedness guide. We actually, I guess the way the agreement wound up was that we would pay the full amount of the disaster preparedness guide, but would receive the sponsorship revenues. So we're getting those revenues of a little over $8,000 coming into the city. So essentially, this change is a wash to us from 1 year to the next.
This is consistent with how we made the purchase last year. What changed, to my knowledge, this year, or going into this year, is that we had additional sponsors who also wanted to purchase some of the guides. So we're actually ordering additional guides than what we originally expected to purchase, but we have that offsetting sponsorship revenue. So we kind of went into the year expecting that we were going to make this purchase. We just weren't expecting to purchase as many copies of the guide.
This is where lots of times, you know, you spend the money, but you make revenue off of it, but the revenue goes into the revenue side.
Right.
So if you overspend and your revenue's higher, you don't see it, but that's a good example. If it wasn't for that, they'd be under budget this year.
Purchasing contracts, this is the area with the one additional full-time equivalent being proposed. Staff assistant position for contracts and risk management. I think we talked a little bit about this one at the last meeting we had a couple weeks ago. That's primarily the biggest driver. The fully loaded cost for that position, including all benefits and related overhead, is $42,500, which accounts for almost the entire change from the 15-16 budget. As far as the 15 budget to the 15 estimate, this one's coming in a little bit higher than the original budget, primarily due to some additional contract labor help related to, similar to what we're proposing the new position for. They needed some administrative help in the risk management and contract area this year. And that's what the change is for this year, is for that temporary employment.
Do you have a job description for this position?
Yes, it's a staff assistant, which is what we have throughout. So it's pretty generic job description. Specifically, it addresses our risk management. It has to do with our safety program, our insurance, and then also all the contracts go through this. And it's where we used to have multiple people in there, and now we just have Diane, and it just started to cause some problems with getting necessary jobs done when you have a combination. This is where, when we reorganized, we actually had a separate risk management and contracts, and then we consolidated that and actually reduced staffing, and this is one of those that we really need.
So you're saying that the workload has increased, and the only way you can cover it is put somebody else on or pay overtime.
Yeah, workload has increased and staffing has decreased both by the consolidation.
Okay. And bill raises an interesting one of those things that you have to look at. At what point does overtime exceed the position? And it's not just dollars, it's also productivity and capacity to do the job. Right. After 40 hours, I get pretty bummed. So.
You do.
Actually, after about 25 hours.
Well, you, in industry, 15% is considered the most overtime that you'd want to work before people become safety problems, and actually, you're better off.
Bill, does that include is it 15%? That's where the productivity decreases, or does that incorporate also the balance of the fact that overtime is time and a half versus straight time?
Both. And also, in a factory, of course, you have to worry about people getting hurt, and the more hours they put in, the bigger risk they are for injury. Yep. So, in general, 15% is a guideline.
For a clerical staff, the overtime doesn't generate injuries. It generates errors of omission or overlooking things. Okay.
The city clerk's office, pretty static budget, 15 to 16. The increase is primarily related to personnel cost increases from year to year. This year, we have an estimated decrease in this budget. We have budgeted some amounts in here for election costs that we might have had to pay at the beginning of the fiscal year for last November's election. It wound up those did not come to fruition, and we didn't have those budget costs. So there's a significant savings in this year's budget because of that. City attorney, do you want to talk about your negotiations with the city attorney?
Yeah, city attorney is one of those that Bill has been with us for about 8 years now, and five of those we've had retainer agreement. That 5 year contract has seen no increase at all. So we've been stagnant really for the whole 8 years that we've had Brown Garden. I guess it's now Garden.
Garden Weissman Garden.
Yeah. So met with Anthony last week when he was here, and they are obviously increasing their fees to all their clients. And they have proposed a 15% increase in the retainer, and then also the hourly rate going from $150 to $175. I did a lot of the math based on what we're seeing here. We're still, any numbers you want to look at, our retainer based on the last 2 years of time would still be $130 an hour or less. And I would challenge you to find an attorney you can find out there for $130 an hour.
How much of this expense is related to the attorney that comes to the red light camera hearings?
It's included in the retainer. Mm.
But how many dollars? If we did need that attorney.
It's not a large portion. The vast majority of the work that's being done is what I would consider general, which is development services, code enforcement, other than red light cameras. Red light camera, you know, there's a full day when attorney needs to be there, and there's some preparation and some follow-up. But it's arguably settled down from a couple of years ago. You know, when you, as Jim indicated, when you look at the monthly retainer, and we don't just send you a bill for the $23,000, which is the retainer. We send you, I mean, it's thick. It's every thing that's been done for the city, and it breaks it down not just with what's been done, but also how much time has been spent. So it's certainly there, public record. And if you look at that, the vast majority of it is for general services, preparing for, reviewing all the work that's done here. And again, it varies. I mean, some months you're going to be doing a lot more with the development side of it. Some months you're going to be dealing with code enforcement. And as Jim indicated, it's been about 2009, 2010, the retainer has been pretty much the same. And so that'll increase a little bit. But the hourly rate, that's not associated with retainer. That's for matters that are outside the retainer. That's gone up. We're asking that it go up to 175. That's more for the litigation that's not covered within the retainer.
This is actually a separate amendment to the contract, which will take separate action by City Council. But we're budgeting for it now. That's one of the reasons we're doing it.
So last year we had nothing outside of the retainer?
Oh, no. You have something outside of the retainer every year.
So how did we budget?
Well, you can budget the retainer. I mean,
that's what I'm saying.
You estimate what the litigation is going to be. And certainly,
I see. Oh, so we're estimating right now, but we don't see any. I'm looking at 2015.
Right.
So we budgeted, obviously, what the retainer is.
The retainer plus some, there's some also some amounts that are budgeted for non-retainer
costs
based on historical.
So right now we're on that track.
Right.
Okay.
What we're looking at is we're going to hit our budget.
I think the retainer is about $250,000.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So you can see the difference.
Yep.
Okay, but outside of the retainer, we incur legal expenses.
Yes, sir.
And where are those in the budget?
Right there.
Take the 250, subtract it from the 393, and that's your.
I mean, I don't know exactly. The retainer went from 23 to 26, something around there. It's really honestly, and then the difference in the increase is going to be the difference in the hourly rate.
But if we need to call on Deborah Babb-Nutcher for something, that's not in there, is it?
Yes, unless the way our contract works is whenever there is a lawsuit, then that goes outside the retainer. So any of the lawsuits, if Deborah is working on something that's, you know, we've been sued on or we're suing somebody or it's in a conflict mode, then she will bill us hourly. If we need to talk to Deborah about something that's not a lawsuit, or we need to talk to Katie or Greg Johnson or Garganese or any of them, there's a, you know, the whole firm, which each have their own specialty. That's all within the retainer.
And we're budgeting based on foreseeable that year, anything we think we know that's coming up, and some kind of historical.
Right, we look at what we historically have paid for legal costs over the last, let's say, 5 years above and beyond the retainer, and then we've used that 15% increase also for that because of the other rates, and that's how we got to this. Also include, I'm sorry, and also included in here, Virginia, the city clerk, she split 50-50. Half of her costs are in city attorney, because she's a city paralegal also, and half of her personnel costs are in the city clerk.
But that's a good point. So it's not all.
And I've got to give her this plug. I mean, it would be impossible. It would be impossible for us to be able to do the work that we do for the city of Palm Coast without Virginia's help. She's absolutely essential as kind of a the first line of defense for the day-to-day matters that come.
The actual contracts services, in other words, and attorneys, and it's we also have a labor attorney that comes out here too, I believe. We have budgeted for this year of $345, and we think we're going to be on target. So out of this $395 is actually outside attorney fees.
And that includes labor?
That includes
the outside.
Outside, yes. Right. Yes.
Continuing down Bill's path, what the amendment to the contract, what year in the contract are we in?
The retainer portion of the contract, we're 5 years. We've just completed 5 years.
So this will be a new contract?
It would be an amendment to it.
An extension of the contract, or do we have some...
This doesn't have a term. We're
oh, it's open ended.
Yeah, we're any shouldn't give you this idea, but any Tuesday. I mean,
it's one of the few contracts we have that they are like contract labor.
Okay.
You know, and you can terminate it at any time.
Okay. So then following Bill's path, when we no longer need an attorney in 2017 to come once a month, will there be a reduction for the red light camera attorney? Because right now that's included in the total hours for the retainer.
Certainly willing to look at that. Absolutely.
Good point.
But that's fair. I mean, I'm happy to go through the contract and take a look at over historically how much of the retainer has been for the red light camera. As I said before, I don't think it's been a large substantial portion of it, but we're happy to look at that.
So are we?
Without thinking that's a good idea, but as a matter of fiscal responsibility, do we look at any kind of competitive bid? Do we measure what we're spending for our legal services with other municipalities?
Well, yeah. And not just other municipalities, but we look at what is kind of going great out there. I can tell you that, like, our labor attorney is like $250, $275 an hour. Most attorneys,
but that guy's tall. It's tall.
It is.
I can wear lips.
Price-wise, this is extremely competitive, and I think the reason is because this is what they specialize in, and this is.
I understand that, but we still should be able to come forward and say, you know what, Brown Garganese is a good deal for us because.
Well, I can answer that. The this is a routine
without prejudice.
With prejudice, but factually accurate. I mean, as Jim has indicated, if you do the math, based upon the number of hours that this our law firm spends that goes into the retainer amount, it boils down to, on an average, between $120 and $130 over the last several years. Okay. The average hourly rate that qualified city attorneys are charging the Central Florida area is anywhere between $160 and $180 an hour. Some of those is based upon retainer, and I think it's mixed, and others charge hourly. And if you look at the hourly rates for other attorneys, other qualified attorneys, attorneys that do this for a living, I mean, you don't want a divorce lawyer, you don't want a PI lawyer doing this work, nor would I want to be doing personal injury work, nor would I want to be doing divorce work. You know, we specialize. I've done it, I don't want to do it again. But the point is if you look at people that do this for a living, the in Central Florida, the hourly rates, and it goes up to $185, $190 an hour, but the average is between $160 and $180.
And again, I'm not looking at this from the standpoint strictly of the quality of work. I don't think that's in question here. I just want to be able to tell the people that I represent that we've shopped around, and people that are qualified to do this, this is the best deal we can get.
Yeah. In other words, it'd be prudent for us to be able to just show this is what we have. This is what's, where we showed we did our due diligence and we're doing exactly. Just fine with the people we have, and then throw on the business knowledge or the familiarity with the city as an addition, that all works for us.
And we have all that. I mean, yeah, we submit, good. I mean, and we're happy to get that to you if you'd like.
That would be. That would
some
be
of us took a beating when you went from a Kia to a Nissan.
It's a Hyundai to a Nissan. I want to be very clear.
We'll provide you that type of information when we bring the contract. I do want, because I do hear, it's like any other contract with engineering firms or whatever. You go out to bid and periodically do review. Now, this is more, once again, Bill is and his whole team is more like part of your staff. If you're not happy with your legal services, you fire them, and then you go find somebody else. But it makes no sense to just every 3 years go out and open competitive bids, and you wouldn't do
but
that.
But it's also more important to show the people we're not getting
the dollar amount, and
that's all. Right. Absolutely. Exactly. And like you say, there's more to it than just the dollar to dollar.
Right. We think that's one of the best stories that we can tell. Yep. So we're more than happy to provide the information and documentation.
We hate saying right next to them, but we do have a good deal. That's what you want to hear.
And it can always get better.
Yeah.
And that's why. And that's what I want to hear. I want to hear that.
We
know what it would cost to replicate what Brown, Garganese, Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner, and Smith do.
Do we cheat them and how?
It's Jack and Jack.
We have looked into the fiduciary, and we're telling you that this is the best way to go.
There is no question you can find an attorney cheaper. Mm-hmm. We've seen some of those mm-hmm. around.
Yes, we have.
But you don't want
where their dads has to come and pay.
Yeah, we don't want Mr. Weiss's father to come in and have to give us some money.
Oh, he won't.
I didn't mention his name.
He won't.
All right, then Katie.
I have one other question. The amendment, I know you're going to bring this to us, you said, but the amendment is not going to change what's covered under the retainer. It's just going to be financial.
You will see one other thing, and that is some real estate transactions and having that outside the retainer when we have complicated real estate transactions. We've had some of these strange, and we need to do a full-blown title search and legal services and those type of things.
It's more new. It's a service that we can provide that we haven't really been providing.
And we have a tendency to do it in-house, but sometimes we need to have an attorney take a look at it.
And it's one of these things, if you don't need us, you don't use us.
Okay.
It's just a lot we're buying and a lot of our retaining. But some of these deals that are complicated, that has deals with banks and foreclosures and all those type of things, it's well beyond what it would be a typical land transaction would be under the retainer. It gets more, it's in that conflict area. So it's not really a lawsuit, but it's consistent with that. So we're just going to outline that for you.
Okay. Finance. We have a proposed increase of 5.9%, a little over 40,000. That's primarily related to auditing and related fees and studies. Many of you may or may not have heard about a lot of discussion about all of the new pension standards and OPEB standards that have actually increased the cost to the city in order to make sure we have everything in order to comply with all of these new GADFI standards. So building that in, and then also there's a additional fees based on the number of grant programs that we anticipate, federal grant programs. So I know I've been hearing a lot about a lot of potential new grants coming the city's way. When that happens, it's almost like a mini audit above and beyond the regular audit. Those are something like $3,000 to $4,000 additional in fees. So I built a couple more of those into the budget. I don't know for sure that we'll use them. It'll really depend on whether we get these grants or not.
A separate consultant or to our auditor?
Same auditors, but it's more or less part of the fee. We have a fixed fee for the core audit, mm-hmm. and then if they've got to do yellow book audit stuff above and beyond that, I think it's either $300 to $3,500 for each additional yellow book audit that they have to do above and beyond that.
So you're anticipating a certain number of programs, and that's going to bear this.
Right, I factored in two. You know, that we have additional two, only because I've been hearing a lot about the grants from the different departments, potential grants that we're going to get, but,
if we don't get the grant, we don't spend the money.
We don't spend the money, exactly. And that's part of the reason why, for the estimate for fiscal year 15, why we're coming in about $10,000 on the budget, is because of that reason. We've factored in for some single audit fee costs that we don't have to pay for fiscal year. That's the biggest really variable that we have in the finance department, the actual audit and related consulting fees. Human resources, there's about a little over $25,000 increase here. This year, we received our grant this year, our $27,000 grant for employee training that we had talked about. Was actually in our non-departmental area because we really didn't budget for it anywhere. Next year, we're budgeting for the expense for those programs, and we anticipate getting up to an $18,000 grant for that additional training. Really belongs in the HR budget going forward if we're going to be continuing with those kind of programs. So most of that increase is related to that additional training that the grant program.
What's the source of that grant?
Career source.
State. So it's actually shifting it from one budget to this budget. It's not really an increase on the bottom line.
Right. It's not an increase on the bottom line.
So are you saying that this could be reduced by the grant dollars, but you didn't budget for it?
We could have an offsetting revenue. Mm-hmm. We didn't budget for it because there's no guarantees. Right. It's really based on which employees participate and what their salary range is my understanding.
Right, yes.
So to be conservative, we did not budget the revenue because we're not positive that we'll receive it, but there's a good chance that we will.
Right, and
that.
It's a reimbursable type grant.
Right.
So it
we
depends.
Spend it.
Right, and
exactly.
who actually attends. And
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, we just recently received our check for a portion of this year's training that we've done so far. We've gotten one check-in so far on that recently. I think it was $20,000.
And what's the nature of the training, Chris?
This was for the, we did two of them. We did the management supervisory training. It was a 10-class series. We did in coordination with Daytona State College and also annual required customer service training for all of our employees. Those were the two big ones. Economic development, this is basically where Bo lives as far as his salary and the related personnel expenses. Also in here, the really now, I guess the third largest expense is we have money put aside for economic development incentives within this budget. This is where the BAC funding comes from, BAC funding that we send to UCF. And then also new for fiscal year 15 and 16 is the Bruxton contract is in here. Starting in fiscal year 16, it's a three-year contract. The 16 and 17, $45,000 that we've committed to Bruxton, assuming that we continue to go forward with that. Half of it will be paid out of this budget, and the other half will be paid out of the BAC Enterprise Flagler contribution that we have.
Is that the commercial attraction strategy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's the commercial attraction strategy.
Is Bruxton budgeted for having an office in the city facilities?
No.
Okay, and when are they going to actually come on board?
Contract has been signed, so they're on board. As we've said before, they've got all the background work they've got to perform.
I think their presentation said like 6 weeks for their preliminary.
Contract was just executed, and they had 60 days, 60 days. Lead time to get the scout software set up for us, and then we start the training and the public outreach.
Well, are they going to work out of here? Are they going to be somewhere here where you can walk up and actually see a person?
They're more remote as far as being there than as far as being at Florida ICSE and those kind of conferences. But there is all self-serve information to help us do the commercial attraction.
Are they going to come to this council and give progress reports?
Sure.
Good.
We'll see the other half of the Bruxton costs at the next meeting when we go into some of the special revenue funds. So half of it will be here for 16 and 17. This is the construction management engineering. Again, we had that kind of that initial conversation 2 weeks ago, where it's a new division within community development that's kind of combining elements of the former engineering, stormwater engineering, utility development, construction management divisions that were kind of spread all over the city, consolidating it into one managed process. Each basically department will pay for their portion as they do now, general fund, utility, and stormwater.
So they pay based on an allocation, or are you going to collect actual data?
We're basing this first year on actual costs. We'll obviously know better after we get a year under our belt.
Sure.
This is based on our what we believe the actual costs are going to be. These same actual costs the departments are paying now. Stormwater is paying it now. The utility is paying it now. The general fund is paying it now. And we're just kind of consolidating it in one place and consolidating the funding for one department. When you look at 2015, this is just the general fund portion of the engineering department, but it'll be a total change as we go forward through 16 and beyond. The actual net effect of the general fund is none. It's basically the same. Planning department, fiscal year 16, proposed expenditures are down a good chunk. Again, one of the reasons it is right now, this is where a couple of the construction management folks are living this year. We'll be moving to the new division that we just looked at. That's really the driver for that. That would be Carl and Susan, the folks that do all the construction management now that are part of the planning department that are moving into the construction management area.
Which department are the building inspectors in?
They're in the building department. That one's not part of the general fund. We'll actually see that in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Items in planning, one of the new items for fiscal year 16 is we budgeted funds to get started on the comprehensive transportation impact fee study that we had talked about and looking at, ways to deal with infill potentially and things of that nature as it relates to transportation impact fees. So that is budgeted in the 2016 budget. It's ridiculously expensive, I might add. So we budgeted $75,000 in fiscal year 16. and it will be a fairly lengthy process to go through that. But that is included in the planning budget. I know we've had some of those discussions when it came to our priorities. Again,
how much did you, so that's for outside consultants?
For outside consultants, yeah.
And what is the budget for?
$75,000.
Mm-hmm. And you anticipate that's to complete the entire project or to?
To be honest with you, we're not exactly sure yet. We've been told it's anywhere between $60,000 to $120,000, one of these full comprehensive studies.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of split it a little bit more than the middle, figuring that by the time we identify a consultant and get started, they're not going to work the whole year anyway. That's what we've got.
And you're using the general fund for this and not the transportation impact fee fund?
Yeah, it's funny you should ask that question, because the city attorney has advised that we can't use transportation impact fees to do a study about transportation impact fees.
Is that right? I didn't think that was true.
I did extensive research.
Okay. Well, I'm going to remember that.
I'm glad you bring that up, because there's a certain city manager that brings that up to me repeatedly.
Yeah, I already tried. So. I don't think you forget anything about impact fees, do you?
Not generally.
Yeah, not generally. You keep us on our toes.
What do you think?
Yeah. I try to maintain affordable housing. That's what I do for a living.
For the fiscal year 15 in the planning, we're anticipating to come in basically right on budget for the year. Code enforcement.
You haven't mentioned any staffing changes in the last two or three presentations. So.
Other than a couple of people that are moving around.
I just want to make sure I'm okay with the comfort zone from the standpoint that new construction continues to grow. I want to make sure that we're staffed to accommodate it.
That's been an issue I've raised in the past.
Right.
Yeah,
and that really affects new construction. There's some effect in the general fund, but the effect is really in also in the utility fund, where you have expansion due to new construction, the building department fund, the stormwater fund, things like that are also really more the people that are affecting new construction.
We added a couple in the planning this year, couple of years.
But we as a city still continue to take probably an undeserved beating for not being a friendly place to build in and stuff.
You could have 20 more planners and you're still going to hear that when they don't give them the right answer lots of times. Mm. There's a difference between not being timely and versus not liking the answer.
But we are being timely, so.
All the performance measures I'm seeing is that we're very on target. That's one of the adjustments we've made. I haven't heard the Home Builders Association comment about the bottlenecks here as of late. So our customers are the ones that give us that feedback. And then I just saw it yesterday. I met with Community Development yesterday, and their performance measures all look good as far as being time.
A lot of cases we're exceeding.
Code enforcement, I'm going to kind of start at the bottom here. For fiscal year 15, we're looking at coming a little over $65,000 under budget. That's primarily related to, we had a couple of, turnover in the code enforcement. We had a retirement, the office manager retired, and so we're coming in under because of the time that those positions were unfilled, waiting to be filled. For fiscal year 16, there's a slight decrease in the budget. Code enforcement was actually one of the departments that really benefited from the all of the changes we made with the workers' comp rating and all the positive change to our workers' comp rates. So this was one of the areas, and that's why you're really seeing a decrease, is because the workers' comp expense here went down from what we were originally budgeting due to those improvements in the workers' comp experience rates.
With the lower amount of fines, if you will, being levied by the two or three red light cameras that are left, the code enforcement staff hasn't changed?
Has not changed.
It's not all working.
Okay.
Me either. It's important to know that.
law enforcement budget. I know Jim recently sent out a few emails about some negotiations as it relates to the contract with the sheriff's department here.
We have the number of deputies and supervisors that our contract calls for, that the city pays for, and the contract calls for any actual cost. And, you know, we'll look at those positions each year, and we did that. It also says the maximum that we could see an increase is 3%. The sheriff and I have talked, and not the supervisors. The supervisors, we plugged in the actual cost. Again, someone went up, someone went down because of some turnover. A new supervisor not making as much as previous because they're at lower starting salaries. He is trying to increase the pay and be more competitive. There have been a number of years where they haven't had any pay increases at the county. So we discussed it, and I agreed to support a 6% increase per deputy cost. And when you plug that figure in, it comes up to be a total of a 3.7% increase. Slightly over what the contract says the maximum is, but his actual cost per deputy went up more than 6%, double digits this year. So I support this, and we hope the city council would support this too.
Well, I support the increase in pay for the deputies, but I still don't think that the city should pay for an SRO. I think that should come out of the school district's budget. I don't like paying for an SRO. First of all, I don't think they do anything, but even that aside, if you're going to put deputies in the school, let the school pay for it.
The concept behind this is that when the deputies are during the summer, when they're not in the schools, they're in our neighborhoods. And so that's the concept of only paying for one of them, the portion of time that they are actually in our neighborhoods.
How many are there?
Three? We pay for one.
One?
But there's
half a dozen.
Five, six.
They don't do the summer programs for kids.
I'm not sure what you mean by summer programs.
Well, things that we have going on in that the kids are involved in. I know my granddaughter goes to a summer program that's from the school. Is it the same deputy that goes to those things, if they even have one of those things?
The SROs
circulate within the school, looking for possible illegal activity. So they'll tell you that we get a lot of tip-offs of drug deals going down and things of that nature, and we're able to head them off. But I don't want to get into a long discussion on that. I think from a responsibility standpoint, if it's a program that goes into the school, then the school budget ought to pay for it. They're 60% of my taxes anyway.
That is one of the nice things about the contract. If city council wants to add or delete any of the positions, and how many deputies, and
I'm okay with the deputy head count. I love the raise. I think they deserve it. But I just still don't think.
As a council, you can change the. It's really kind of up to you as to what you want to want to pay for.
What's the total number of deputies, commanders, sergeants?
22, 23?
I think it's 25. I think the number is 20. I can find it for you real quick. But, if I recall, it's 25.
Okay, that's close enough. I don't need to know exactly.
That's the idea.
They're dedicated.
Yeah.
Dedicated over and above what I guess.
But they're also available to the whole county, I'm going to imagine, in case of an emergency or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly. The deputies that aren't dedicated to Palm Coast come into Palm Coast on a regular basis.
Right. So, yeah. Six of one.
It's.
The world balances and continues to run.
I would suggest what we're going to need to do is, this is another one, like the attorney's contract,
This would be an amendment to the contract. We will bring that forth to you. And at that time, if you want to reduce it, decide what deputies and school resource officers you pay or don't pay for. This is a proposed budget based on those numbers and what we currently have in the contract plus a...
I'm only speaking for myself. I'm good with the deputies and I'm good with the raise, but I'm not good with an SRO.
Okay. And what I'm saying is that you... Approving the budget doesn't approve the SRO. It would be approving that contract, which will come back to you.
Which includes the SRO.
Right. So, but at that time, you can eliminate.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm comfortable with the SRO. I think they do work the community as well. Their commander just retired, or that might not be the term for him. I admit, or sergeant, I think it was Sergeant Lutz, was it? Who ran the program. For city council, I was on the juvenile justice committee, and I think Heidi, you're doing that now. And so we got regular reports from him, and what the community policing that SROs do actually in the community after school and on the weekends and outside of school time, and how they're able to mentor the kids as well. And I understand what you're saying, that this school. It makes more sense that the school should be paying for it, but I don't know. It takes a community, and I think they're doing good work in the community as well. Well,
I'm sure they're very professional. I know Mike Lutz, and they're very well trained and very professional law enforcement officers. I'm not sold that having a full time deputy patrolling around inside the school is any kind of a meaningful change, nor does it give the kind of security that you would need if you got another Newtown thing that would happen in Flagler Beach. And one guy in a school this size, not going to change anything. Other than that, if Sheriff Manfrey wants to put him out on patrol or make him some sort of a liaison with the children's activities, I'm fine with that.
I understand what you're saying, and I think you probably know, because I know you spent a lot of time investigating or better understanding the school district, that they've been hardening their entrances to try to protect. I don't think you can protect against everything, unfortunately.
No, you can't, and especially, you. Can, I mean, if you're going to say to me, by golly, I'm going to make our school secure, you probably need 10 times as many SROs as you got. Mm-hmm.
I found it, so it's actually a total of 24. One commander, 3 sergeants, 2 corporals, 17 deputies, one of those being a school resource.
I'm comfortable with it. I look at the SRO as a specialist. He's familiar. The kids will be familiar with his face. I agree. I think we should always try to get the county to pay for it. The school district. But
actually, I'd be happy for the county to pay for it also.
Oh, yes, right. You should take another share.
To Bill's point, I see them more as a proactive, preventative kind of presence. You're right. In the event of a school shooting, one deputy there is not going to make a bit of difference. But maybe that deputy gets wind of, gets advance notice, hears trends and rumors.
Maybe he gets to know which kids are more apt to do
something.
Which
ones you need to be watching a little more closely.
Officer Grant was at the schools when my kids were there, and he knew the kids inside out. He knew where they lived and everything.
The hardest thing about law enforcement.
He was also after school programs too, which would bring me to the same understanding as Mr. McGuire, that he's doing a lot of school activities inside the school, and then afterwards, he deals with mostly everything for the school.
So let them pay for it.
The hardest thing in law enforcement is to measure, quantify in any way, your preventative activities. It's easy to calculate the amount of crime, but how do you calculate the amount of crime that didn't occur because of it?
Yeah. We can have that argument until the cows come home,
or the kids come home.
Okay. One other note on the law enforcement budget is that this is one of the few divisions But there literally is one expense, and that's the contract. There's no other people, there's no other anything else in here other than the cost of the contract. Fire department, next on our list. For kind of start at the bottom a little bit for fiscal year 15, original budget versus estimate. It's up quite a bit. A big chunk of that, $250,000, is related again to this FEMA cost grant that we were talking about. And when you compare 15 and 16 proposed, it's about a $300,000 increase, 4.2%. One of the interesting things with the fire department is that a bulk of their costs are personnel. So when we factor in the cost to health insurance, you know, projected performance increases and things like that, it makes a big number because their payroll is such a big part of the number. So though the increase 4% looks small, the dollar amount looks a lot bigger because we're starting out with a much bigger number to begin with. Parks and Recreation, this is not the actual maintenance portion. This is the programming portion of our recreation program. The expenditures for the fiscal year 16 over 15, proposed increase of $143,000, 11%. About $110,000 of that is increased staffing. As Lena had mentioned, the one full-time rec supervisor, fully loaded, what I believe was about $60,000 with all costs and overhead. The rest of the increased staffing, which is just under $50,000, was a whole bunch of additional as-needed part-time seasonal employees to get the various programs up. And that's where we kind of, as we talked earlier, we kind of boiled that down into what it is approximately on a full-time basis, which is essentially two positions.
This is consistent with your priorities you were talking about, additional senior programs, additional youth programs, and having a very small staff to begin with, and also still trying to use the seasonal help, which is obviously a lot less expensive than full-time help, but you still have to have that supervisor in charge of the program when you increase this.
For fiscal year 15, estimate versus the budget, we're looking at coming in just under $40,000 under the original budget in this particular department.
Do we need any additional cost or any additional funds when there's an election? We've got an election next year, and it will take place in our community center, among other places. Does that incur any additional cost to us?
Only if it's our election, potentially, there's additional cost for us. You know, if it's a city council.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore. We throw our elections are rolled in with everybody
else. Right, right. But there's potential additional costs to the city that would be passed on by the supervisor of elections. In the case where we're just a conduit, where they're just using our space, there really isn't any appreciable increase in cost to us.
It could be lost revenue.
Potential lost revenue, correct. But nothing we could budget for.
Okay. But that election will fall into the 2017 budget, won't it?
Well, there will be the
November
primary.
Of 16.
This primary
is in November. Like
we, and it's budget under city clerk, and I just pulled it up.
Yes.
And we actually have $15,000 in there, which used to be $60,000 or so when we get it. Okay. So there's still a little additional cost. We think that's on the high side. It has to do with if they have to go to the second page and there's some costs associated with.
Well, we got Virginia goes to the canvassing board meetings and.
Oh yeah, those costs would not be direct dollars we spend, but time and absolutely a lot of time.
Just wanted to make sure we considered that.
Yeah, believe we have it covered.
All right.
Yeah, it's usually the ballot costs and things like that we have to consider, when, you know, if the city is going to have to share in those expenses. Tennis center. our original budget was a little over $300,000. for fiscal year 15, again, I'm starting on the bottom, we're actually coming in closer to an estimate of expenses of about $275,000. The biggest number here is there was amounts budgeted for the resurfacing within the tennis center, but that process was actually finished last year. So we didn't have any of that carry over to the current fiscal year. There are some savings and, you know, small savings in operational expenses and staffing savings. And for fiscal year 16, essentially working with Kemper, they anticipate the budget to stay flat, the expense budget next year. So if you kind of look at the proposed and estimated column on top of each other, you can kind of see that. That their proposal right now is to keep the expenditures flat at the tennis center.
So the difference between 16 and 15 is not due to Kemper management, it's due to the expenditures to maintain the courts?
From the original to where we are now?
Yes.
Okay. That was completed. We didn't have any of the court resurfacing this year, but they have had some, you know, some improvement in expenses, okay. But it's such a small budget that it's, you know, I can't sit here and tell you that they made a $50,000 difference.
What is other expenses, not including insurance and internal allocations? It's about $80,000.
It's on the worksheet.
Yeah.
On the tennis?
Tennis, yeah.
The very bottom line.
Supplies.
Oh, do we lump all of the? Okay, yeah, that's what it is. Yeah, that's their operating expenses.
Okay.
That's the
aside from personnel.
We can actually put in here. I'll make sure we put in here. Kemper provides us a much more detailed individual line item budget.
I think it's included on one of the additional pages.
Not
on yours.
Not on yours. We'll make sure it's in the folder. This is just a summary of, they have a whole laundry list of operating expenses, and this is a summary of that. But we'll make sure that that gets in the folder. They do provide us a detail, much more detailed line item budget. golf course, the actual expenditure starting at the bottom again for fiscal year 15, the expenditures are going to come in about $40,000 higher than the original budget. Almost all of that is related to course maintenance. We talked a lot about that we needed to improve the course maintenance from fertilizer to, you know, mowing to, you know, all kinds of stuff. In addition to that, we did not have at the golf course this year the maintenance staff and the supervisor fully. They didn't work the whole year because the positions were vacant. Working with Kemper on the actual expenses, and we spent a lot of time with them, with the new management there, and the 2016 proposed budget of $1.6 million right now is what we consider the right budget to fully do all of the maintenance that's required at the golf course.
None of that maintenance is capitalized?
None of this maintenance is capitalized. There are some other improvements that are requested as part of the parks renovation budget, which we'll talk about next week, particularly related to the bunker improvements that need to be done. But this is just getting and keeping the course at the high level that we expect it to be at.
So it's normal wear and tear. It's not capital improvement, right?
I've been hearing recently that we're spending $1.5 million at the golf course, and that is the expenditure number. But this doesn't reflect the revenue side of and so just keep that in mind.
And why aren't you spending that out of Kansas Woods?
Well, what is the revenue side?
The anticipated revenues for this current fiscal year is about $1.3 million. I have gotten a number of phone calls of very upset citizens saying that, you know, how could $1.5 million of my tax dollars be going to support the golf course each year? And I have to remind them that we also get back $1.3 million in revenue. It's really the difference that's being supported.
So then their question is, how are you spending $200,000 on a golf course? Yeah.
Well, honestly, most of the time they're relieved that it's not $1.5 million. So they're okay with it. But I do explain that, you know, at this point, you know, the golf course revenues are not supporting the expenses to keep it functioning at the level it needs to be functioning at. But I think that's a good point. there is, again, a more detailed line item by line item budget for Kemper. We'll make sure it was on the link. The next one is the park facilities budget. These are the actual crews that go out there and do all the work of maintaining the parks and fields.
Park maintenance?
Park facilities maintenance, yeah. We probably refer to it with both names, park facilities, park maintenance. For fiscal year 15 at the bottom, you know, essentially it looks like we're going to come in just slightly under budget for the year. For fiscal year 16, there's a number of requests here. This, again, is part of the increase in personnel in the general fund. Essentially 2.5 full-time equivalents, 2 full-time equipment operators, and a part-time maintenance worker. We talked a little bit about this at the last workshop. Those 2.5 positions, fully burdened with all benefits and overhead, come to about $116,000. That $116,000 is a little over half of the total increase in the budget that's being requested for fiscal year 16. The balance of that is fertilizer and all kinds of related stuff to maintain the facilities. One of the other reasons for the increase is with the new Holland Park coming online next year, there's going to be an uptick in the amount of maintenance that's going to be required there because they're making quite a bit of changes, not only with the dog parks, but with the fields and walking paths and bathrooms and everything else. And they factored those costs into what they think those costs are into their budget.
When you say part-time maintenance worker, Chris, are you saying less than 32 hours a week?
I believe so. I believe it was 2 days a week is what they were looking for.
Well, that's
one. It was one part-time.
Yeah, I think the part-time maintenance worker had better have his track shoes on.
It was a specific.
It was a weekend. Evening hour weekends for restrooms. A very specific need that, come Monday morning, restrooms can get pretty raunchy if you don't have somebody going out there. But you really don't need a full-time person because it doesn't take them all day, both Saturday and Sunday. So they're looking for a part-time person, somebody who just wants a few extra hours.
But there's got to be more in the workload than just restrooms. I mean,
for the part-time person, I don't know exactly.
I think it was the garbage, picking up the garbage, the receptacles and all that stuff.
Right.
For all of our facilities.
Right, but only for the after hour, not during the day, not during the 8 to 5 normal work hour.
I'm just trying to picture a person coming up here, getting in a company pickup truck with his supplies and going down, starting at Park A, going to Park B, and doing it all in less than 32 hours a week. If you can do it, God bless you. I just don't think you can.
Okay.
It was just 2 days a week. The part-time was going to be doing 2 days a week.
2 days a week?
There are other existing staff members that do it the other days a week.
Yeah, but they do it in the daytime.
They do. We do have one evening, like I don't know what you would call the person, comes in like early in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
But that person only works 5 days.
Okay.
Well, what we're looking to do is just augment the services that we're already providing.
Yeah, it's, as we're saying, the augmenting services provided is that the fact of it is you got Long Creek, you've got additional fields at the sports complex.
Ralph Carter Park.
Holland Park. We got a lot of, this isn't unanticipated. We talked about that when we did.
I'm saying it is. It just at first glance, it looks like a lot more work than a part-time person could do. But if, on the other hand, it sounds like you've parceled it out.
Yeah, I think it's once again, it's an addition to what we currently have.
Okay.
And I don't know about you, but I don't hear complaints much about our maintenance in our park.
No, but we do continue to expand our facilities with parks and recreation. So
exactly, and so One of those that we aren't doing this totally in anticipation, a little bit because of Holland Park is anticipation, but we've already had Holland Park, so we basically know what the smaller park workload was. But this is not anticipation. This is actually needs out there right now.
The streets and drainage division is next. Again, these are folks that handle all the streets, sidewalks, medians, things of that nature. At the very bottom, our estimate for the current fiscal year is to come in just under $70,000 under budget, based on current estimates. Next year, kind of unusual to see this, but there's a decrease in the proposed budget. Part of that is because there are two members of the existing staff that's going to be reallocated to the new facilities maintenance fund that we had talked about. So it's really a transfer from one area to the next. But no new positions anticipated here. And that's probably about the most exciting thing happening here. Facilities maintenance, again, these are the folks that do all the repairs and maintenance on the existing city facilities. There is no proposed budget for fiscal year 16 because this is being moved over to the new internal services fund. We'll actually see that in 2 weeks. For the current fiscal year, we're going to come in just almost exactly on budget, just slightly under budget based on the estimates. But these costs will shift to, we will have these costs next year and they will shift to the new internal services fund.
And the reason for this reallocation or repositioning is?
Two things. One was it's part of the kind of the reorganization and management reorganization of the streets division, but also because it really is an internal service. The facilities is an internal service to all the different departments, and it really makes a lot of sense to start.
So the cost will then be allocated to the department that receives the service. Okay.
We were doing that, Mr. Mayor, but just doing it through the general fund, right. That's really not the right place to do that. Okay. That's part of the reason for that.
Do you see any difference in the maintenance and janitorial services in this facility and our new city hall?
Oh, yes, I'm sure there will.
Absolutely.
Have you budgeted for it?
Part of this would be... out of this fund right. Will come that. Yes, and you're going to see when you see this additional staff, not just for here, but the community center, because it's not just facility maintenance, but it's also the setting up of the rooms and those type of things. So there is...
But the janitorial work we contract out, do we not?
Currently, and we are going back out to bid and going to plug in, looking at in-house versus contractual. Some of our facilities would make any sense. Others, when you need someone there fairly regularly, like at the community center, because, you know, changing out rooms,
sure.
Then contract labor doesn't work for that. So we're taking a look at all of that, and we'll be bringing that
back. I'm mainly looking at, okay, we're going to take this facility and put it in a new city hall. What differential may we see in our maintenance costs?
And we are... in the process of looking at that and actually going out and getting proposals to see what the outside world wants charges for the new facilities.
Okay.
The other thing, Mayor, I'd like to add is one of the reasons is, first of all, I think having Lena helping Chris with these type of things really works a whole lot better is trying to have our budget reflect more reality. One of the things that we see is, okay, if you're going to go repair something out of the fire station, the fire chief says, well, pick it out of facility maintenance. Facility maintenance says, no, that's the fire department's. And so actually having the financial documents reflect more of how we operate, I think makes it more efficient. Your favorite department?
Yes, non-departmental. I wish I could come up with a better term, to be honest with you. Okay.
For $1 million, you ought to be able to.
Yeah. Well, the bottom section, the 2015 budget versus estimate, again, we're just coming in just slightly below the original budget in this area. When we compare the 2015 to the 2016 requested budget, you can see there's an increase of about $287,000. $276,000 of it is the general fund portion of the facilities maintenance budget that is getting transferred. This is not a change to the general fund. The general fund has been supporting that portion of the facilities maintenance budget forever. So it's just a matter of moving it from one section of the general fund to the other, so it's not really having an effect on the total general fund net when you look at it. The very bottom, those three items on the bottom, those are our existing grant programs that we have right now. And I know we usually take a pause to kind of discuss those a little bit here at City Council. RSVP is getting a $25,000 contribution. We have a $30,000 cultural arts grants pool, and then $3,000 to the Historical Society is what we have done in 2015.
So this is where if you were to provide a grant to like the Arts Foundation or any other group, this is normally where it would come out of. So.
This includes, is it the funds, taxes collected from the CRA that's then transferred there?
Most of this expense is the funds that are collected through,
and then transferred out.
And then transferred to the CRA, the $540,000 roughly, I think it is. That's the biggest chunk that's in this budget, yes.
Those are and by law, you have to transfer.
Right, right.
So it's.
But if this is just a holding to collect it and then transfer it out.
In and out.
And we have to show it that way, and we have to show, hey, here's all of our taxes coming in, and then this is the portion that's allocated to this.
So before you start, Heidi, I have a question about RSVP.
I can raise my hand.
All right, so...
You don't have to. We know you're coming.
RSVP, I haven't heard much about them lately. I know, well, maybe you can give us a reminder of what they do. But they used to be very prominent in the community. Are they still as prominent, and what can you tell us about them? Do they request this grant, or is it just an annual? We just have been doing it, or?
We always get a letter from them. I don't think we've received it, but they always send a letter. Have we seen the letter that says, please consider us, and they do that each year? $25,000.
I know it's paid quarterly. I know it's not just that here's $25,000.
So. Are we, okay, so, Mr. Mayor, if you can help with this at all, and you're probably most familiar with it. They provide...
RSVP, Retired Senior Volunteer, now they have another title, it's Flag of Volunteer Services. They have well over 1,000 volunteers who put in well over 100,000 hours of volunteer service in the county each year. That service goes to the hospital, that goes to the schools, that goes to the various charities, that goes to a whole host of activities where volunteer services can be used. Very, very successful program, very, very well used program. And when you look at their literature, if you were to pay, if the hospital were to pay the salaries of these people, you'd be looking at millions and millions and millions of dollars. The question, I guess, for City Council is, while it's wonderful to have volunteers go to the hospital and go to the schools and go to the abused wife shelter and the family, this, that, and the other thing, where does the benefit inure to the city that we're giving $25,000?
I know the last contact that I can think of that I've been involved in with the group was during the Starlight Tornado. They were heavily involved in the Starlight Tornado, post-tornado outreach to the citizens.
Right.
So they were part of the disaster group,
going door to door with us, helping hand out information. I don't know, maybe they manned some phones or get some phone calls, but... all that post-event, every time we had a briefing as to, okay, who's going to do what, they were there, and it tells how many people they had available for the
research. And similarly, if we had to pay for that service, we would be out of pocket a substantial amount of dollars. So probably far in excess of the $25,000 that we give them as a grant.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. Now, hopefully we're not going to have another tornado, so hopefully we're not going to spend that kind of money.
The RSVP and the Historical Society are general grants for their operations. There isn't anything specifically tied that they have to produce something in return, other than just reports as to what they're doing, and you get newsletters from the Historical Society that keeps you informed as to what they're up to. RSVP puts out quite a bit of, historically I've always seen quite a bit of literature as to what they've done and how much they've saved the community and things. But we don't have a specific project or program that this is paying for. It's more of their general administration.
Can we request financials from them, please?
We could.
Nice to know what they do.
Well, I couldn't see where their revenue comes from. I mean, are we their sole provider? Right. It's not likely.
I think the county gives them money, too. They do? I know the county recognizes them with placards and stuff.
And they do. They do annual fundraising events.
I think they'd be happy to sit down and give you a briefing.
They'd be more than happy to.
I'm not saying that it's not worthwhile. I just would like to understand that.
Sure.
Call Susie Gamblin and have her schedule for one of our workshops.
Workshops, and she'd come do a little presentation. You'd like?
I mean, you will be very much impressed by that. When Commissioner Holland was on the county commission, she and I did the live auction for their fundraiser for a number of years, and you listen to their presentation to their group. It really is. It's an amazing.
The county does a big splash on them at least once a year, and they bring them up there and go over all the things they've done and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we're saying is if we're contributing this kind of money, it would be nice to get an update on who you are, what you do.
Certainly a reasonable
request.
At least
to be able to say thank you to them for what they do and what they do.
Good, we'll make that happen. Historical Society, want the same thing, or?
That's a little different issue. I mean, if you didn't support the Historical Society, there's a ton of our history that would disappear. You got to listen to Mayor Canfield tell the story. When ITT fled town, his garage was filled to overflowing with all this stuff that they left behind. And if it hadn't been for the creation of the Historical Society, that stuff would have been out at the curb, and we would have lost a precious piece of our early history. So,
I guess my only question would be, are they spending all $3,000, or are they accumulating dollars?
Well, I think what they do, and the only reason I know this, because they came out to the Tourist Development Council asking for some money. They maintain this building down in Holland Park, and they print brochures. And
they put on presentations at the...
I mean, they do a lot of, they do a lot of the stuff that the chamber does. They kind of duplicate, which is one reason why they didn't get any money from the PDC. But that's what they're doing. They're out promoting Palm Coast through literature, and they're also maintaining a walk-in facility at Holland Park.
Where is that being? Is that being rehabbed? The building at Holland Park?
No.
Staying the same.
We.
He was going to do little movies in there and stuff.
We did a little bit of rehab and things when they moved in. We actually provided that space for them, but it's no additional improvements planned at this time, I don't believe. Not that I can recall.
Ms. Shipley.
Okay, so the cultural arts grants, we give $30,000 a year, which goes to a lot of different things. So the arts, they have the Raise the Roof campaign, they have all the stuff, and they're raising money to build phase one, phase two, put the cover over it, where we do the picnic in the pops, and I'm sorry, I have a cold, so it's going to sound. What I was thinking is if you did $50,000 for 3 years instead of $150,000 that I originally had mentioned at the beginning, matching their money, it would be a dollar person when you come out to how many people we have here, but it would bring in business. It wouldn't be something like, you know, we if, I don't know how long they've been trying to build this thing, but if we don't give them that extra little push and get it, this part of it set up, then we probably will never see all the other stuff that's going to happen. Like, this main part, I think, will get it going. And then a lot of the functions that we have to go out of town for, we can now come here and have it done and have events there and graduations there and brings a little bit of class into Concord, you know.
Are you saying I'm not classy? What was that? So she's saying I'm not classy?
No, it just brings a different feeling into it. And I think with the town center, with that area right now building up and everything kind of building together, I think that would be another thing to put there that would be really special. And I think we'd get a lot of use out of it. And I think it would build the businesses around it, that people would come. And even people come for some things, they would even stay in hotels and build business that way. And they want to tour around Flagler Beach, maybe play some golf while the wife goes and sees a play.
Let me ask, so phase one is done. Not done, but paid for.
Phase
one.
That was the start of the...
They have a permit in right now for basically, let's say, some landscaping, earthwork type.
Yeah, so but phase one, I understand, is paid for. It is funded.
And the stage area, concrete raised platform.
Okay. Phase two is putting a cover over
the roof,
stage.
The pavilion.
Okay.
You also have the temporary mobile unit they're proposing. And they really need some restrooms at the facility.
Right.
The saving grace for me, I mean, I don't know where we're going to get $50,000 from, but were we to do that, the good news is that this is a lease, and should they ever go out of business, should they forfeit, the property and the improvements revert to the city. So it's not like money down the drain. We still have an asset at the end of the day, should that happen.
One of the things our infrastructure team has looked at is kind of on that same theme, is in lieu of providing dollars, actually providing the facility itself. In other words, have the city build the restrooms, or have the city, if you want, in contracts and does the roof, if those are what you want to do, so that if that asset then goes into city property.
The question I would ask is, because you're looking for the multiplier effect. I understand that they got an additional grant because we extended their lease. By providing cash versus service, does one or the other amplify their chances of more grant dollars, or is it a wash? I mean, I'd like to see, if we're going to do something, I'd like to see us do something that enhances the opportunity for them to get more grant dollars from the state.
Absolutely. Typically, and everyone might be different, so it's hard, but I think the state dollars, that if you have a $500,000 project and the state only has put in $250,000 and, you know, the city puts in the rest or the private donations, et cetera, that really helps.
But does in-kind contribution, is that valued as much as cash? In most grant programs, it is.
Yes. I think as long as the facility gets built and they contribute $250,000 to it, you know.
And I think a lot of people who haven't donated because they don't see it, I think the big donators will come forward once they see the first part done and they'll come and say, oh, okay, I want to be part of this because it's, you know, it's something nice.
I love an optimist.
The other possibility, just do it as a grant. You know, so right now this budget has nothing in it whatsoever based on the conversation we had during the strategic action plan and city council priorities.
So are you saying that you may be able to do $50,000 of value for less if we did it in kind, or are you saying we could stretch $50,000 more if we did it in kind?
Yes.
But those aren't the same.
I know. Either is an option, I think.
I'm not totally prepared to answer all these questions. We're just, because right now, this isn't something that we're really working on. We're just
you know, the team has put out ideas, but the concept is that since it's on city property, that, you know, we would then lease the restroom or the pavilion to them, and it'd be part of the lease. Anytime we can do some work in-house, it's always it saves us money when it's things our crews can actually do.
When we compare what it costs us to build a multipurpose path versus what we paid for an outside contractor, we're half the expense.
And
now the question is, does our staff have the capability of?
Once again, I did come here with a proposal,
I mean, those are the kind of things I'd.
Well, I think I like that more than cash. I would also like it to be in line with what benefits them to get that facility up and going quicker. And when I say facility, I mean phase two. I'm just talking phase one and phase two. So I think that is going to provide a great venue for that area and really start getting people out there on a more regular basis.
See,
and get it off the city property.
That's what I'm looking for, this is the spark.
Yeah.
An untapped reservoir that this city has of commercial and retail development is town center. Anything that, as you say, that brings more people there, brings more interest there, people want to jump on board.
So then they ought to come to the Tourist Development Council with a proposal, because there is a TDC budget for capital based upon the fact that you're going to bring in revenue from outside the city, and that's all bed tax money anyway.
Bill, can you meet with them and
sure.
offer them some advice, some guidance?
I already have once. That's how come they got the grant, because I set them up with Mr. Lannon, and the city's grant writer put them together and wrote that grant for them, is my understanding. So they need to, and I expressed this, I think, pretty succinctly, they need to expand their search area. You know, it's not just the city. Okay, it may be located within the city of Palm Coast, but a lot of people benefit from this if it performs the way they say it's going to. And again, the county collects bed tax money for that purpose, you know, to bring in more tourism.
Sure.
So you're saying they should reach into like Flagler County and
absolutely.
Anyone's pocket.
Absolutely. Any way you slice it, it's other than bed tax, it's our revenue anyway, because we pay taxes into the county. But the city of Palm Coast should not be the sole source of their revenue, especially, again, I personally have a problem with giving the taxpayers money to something that's not part of the city. But the TDC, on the other hand, that's why they're there. They want to bring in tourism. And if you can go, and make a case that here's what's going to happen if we get this done and all that, they've got funds that are set aside for that. The city doesn't. The stuff we give cultural arts grants are, okay, somebody wants to put on a play at the Flagler Playhouse and they need some money for promotional, and so they shop around and they come to us, hopefully among other places, and there's money that's available for them.
From a budgetary point of view,
I have the same question.
For the moment, let's think positive. Let's assume we're going to put $50,000 in. And then we still have the unanswered question. Do we go out and hire somebody to do $50,000 worth of work? Do we give them $50,000 cash, or do we do $50,000 in kind? Does those three options impact where or how it gets budgeted?
Well, you know, I think that the ball's in their court. They need to say, here's some in-kind services that would be valuable to us.
We haven't had that discussion yet.
But
what I don't want to do is what's happened in the past. We pass a budget in September, then November somebody says, we should be doing. I'd rather have it in the budget and not spend it than not have it in the budget.
I agree with you, but again, without them, here's some ideas. We're not in a position to just roll the dice and say, here, do this.
I have a Similar but slightly different question, if you could please address it together. If we were to build it ourselves, would it come from our capital budget, which is a mix of different taxes, including sales tax?
The answer is all of that's possible. And it's sales tax, your capital dollar, general capital dollars, your general fund, are general tax dollars that you have discretion as long as it's on public land, public purpose. So I can tell you that the infrastructure team has looked at the idea too, and not in any great detail, but we can present that to you, and then you can make those kind of...
But, Mr. Lannon, in our five-year capital improvement budget, don't we have a piece of land somewhere down in that general vicinity that we were planning to have a community-type...
Yeah, right next door to this. This is all part of that.
We've already put that in our rolling capital improvement plan, I think.
$0 at this point. If it was to happen, it would come out of CRA.
Okay.
And that's the other option. Is that you can use.
That's CRA. What I was going to ask. Is
it's
that
in the
you
same
know,
location?
You use CRA. Well, yeah, it's inside your CRA. It would be for a public purpose and that type of thing. You would have to take a look at the plan and may have to jump through some steps. But there are a variety of options. Not come here prepared because you know during strategic action plan you did not put this as one of your priorities. But we can always now go back and look at it if you want us to look at some options as to there's other. I mean, you know, we've got a special event fund.
We've got to tread very, very lightly in this area because this is a private entity, all right? And if we're not careful and we just breeze into this thing willy-nilly, we'll end up with another golf course on our hands.
Arts programs in every city, large cities, small cities, et cetera, oftentimes, and there are lots of times run by not-for-profits, we have the Flagler Auditorium here that does the same thing, and they have come in and asked for the cultural arts grants, and there's others. But it's seldom a one-year proposal. I mean, they usually come back year after year. So if you're going to start down this path, you need to be prepared for it not to just be a one-time request. Now, you don't have to approve it every year, but this isn't intended to be a one-year request. So, Mr. McGuire, your comments are well taken.
Well, I mean, as a 15-year-old city, I just don't think we're ready to build Carnegie Hall yet.
Well, wait a minute.
If you get to just phase two of this, could stop at that and it would still be...
Exactly, and what I'm looking at, I'm trying to hope that Town Center starts building up, which is going to eliminate the space we currently use for our festivals and whatnot. So we're gonna need a place to do that. And if we build, we own the land. And if we build the roof, then we own the roof. Correct?
You technically
in a sense. But what I'm saying is that wouldn't be money giving to somebody. It would be ours.
That was my point at the outset. Yes.
Yeah, it would be our investment in our community.
Now we would have to be very clear,
right,
in our lease with the Arts Foundation that this is not exclusively theirs; that the city has the ability to use it for functions.
We'll start working on that. You know, it's just a matter of what kind of partnership you want to create with them.
Yes, I want to run it.
Alright, how much? This is one of these chicken and egg or horse and cart kind of things. The question that Jason and I have sort of asked is cash donation, in kind, however, whatever. Bill says, well, we haven't had those discussions with them yet. We're not. At what point is it too late as far as the budget is concerned?
Well, this is just a brief summary of what we've looked at, our projected revenues for next year versus the proposed expenditures we just looked at. And right now we have a cushion above the expenditures of over $170,000 of what you've seen there. So there's a couple things that can happen. We can shrink the millage rate a little bit more to eat the $170,000. We could allocate part of that $170,000, $50,000, just allocated in the budget towards this project to be determined how we spend it. So we have a lot of, you know, if it winds up becoming a capital project for the city, then we'd have to work it into our infrastructure plan and the various funding sources that are available within the infrastructure plan.
Time for questions.
So just thinking from a conservative standpoint, you may want to factor $50,000 in as a placeholder, potentially in a non-departmental area, just to put it there in case you want to do something with it. Obviously, City Council would still have to approve the use of that $50,000 down the road. Might be something to consider at this point.
Would it help if we had them show up at the next Tuesday meeting and would be able to have them do a presentation? I know we've seen presentations before, but and then we can ask them the questions about, you know, how they would want us to do it, if it was beneficial, if we do the work ourselves.
I think it depends on what you all think is helpful.
They're here, so if they could just communicate with us in the next couple days.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, what? So far all they've done is they came and made a presentation with some visual artist conceptions of it, and here's how much money we need. But now we would want them to come in and propose our alternative strategies to get where they want to get.
See, what's important to me, and going back to Steve's, you've got a phased project. But I want to be sure, and I asked this question of them when they did it, I want to be sure that each phase is a standalone, self-sufficient phase.
Sure.
If we stop at phase 2A, it's functional as is. Would restrooms be the next logical thing? Or is there something more logical that completes the phase and makes it functional? But what you don't want is a bottomless pit into which you keep pouring money.
Yeah, definitely not.
I want return on my investment at each step of the process. So I'd be comfortable putting a placeholder in at the moment. That doesn't mean we have to spend it. That doesn't mean they've got the money. If we have those discussions and we're not happy with what we hear, we don't spend it. It goes back into reserves.
Mr. Mayor, we really don't have to make that final decision until our August 25th meeting, which will be a final budget workshop. So between now,
that's
and
what
then,
I was asking. We're not under the gun at this point.
No, between now and then, we can look at alternate scenarios and make the final decision.
If you were to shrink the millage rate to accommodate this, how much are you going to shrink it?
0.2%.
Yeah, 0.1%. Yeah, it wouldn't be bad. Yeah.
Instead of $5 tax increase, you're going to have a $4.50 tax increase.
$4.90. $4.80. We're talking about annual, too. Keep in mind. I don't know what the numbers are, but
it'd be. Okay.
Why don't you go back one slide, because it is important.
Okay, if you'll go. I'm sorry, I'm not done with non-departmental. So I was approached by the Flagler County Free Clinic. They operate in Bunnell. They fill the gap below Medicaid. So if we have residents in Palm Coast, about 67% of their patients come from Palm Coast, primarily your and my district.
Yeah.
And they have all the data and can split it out. And they have been trying to expand their services. They brought on a full-time office manager who will be doing fundraising and that, so they can. They're currently open a couple days. We're expanding to a couple more days as best they can. There's been a lot of changes with the. They are not associated with the Flagler Health Department, but changes that are occurring at the Flagler Health Department are affecting their services as well. And their dollars. They asked for a grant as well. They started with a higher number there. They really could use whatever they could use. And I would like to propose $10,000 for them. They said they were going to try and contact all of you. I don't know if they have or not, to kind of give you some more information and explain what they do, because obviously they can explain it better. But we met with the director, the medical director as well, and one of the board members to talk about what they do, and they do provide a valuable service to the county, and they're trying to expand that service.
So I would see something like that being in that other slide that we saw with the low income, medium income.
Okay, so that's very good. That's a very good point. And I have worked with staff to find out if that is eligible, and it is eligible.
So it's like the white cap, we give it to the people that didn't go.
I did not bring it up then because I thought you made very good points about what development block grants were for and what they should be used for. But that initially, my thought was that this year's plan was already done for the community development block grant. But moving forward, having a grant there for this seems to be the correct place for it in the public service portion of it.
And Jason knows this because we've
had several discussions about this.
Chatted. This one really concerns me from a long-term impact on the community and how the structure works. And I sent City Council a little note. That great program, very important, don't get me wrong. And think it's amazing what these people are doing and how they're providing service to the community. Very, very worthwhile. Because literally have people who otherwise wouldn't get any health care whatsoever. So want to state that. Our system in the state of Florida is that these type of social services for health care go through the state, and they only deal with the county. In other words, there are county dollars earmarked specifically for this. And there are countywide tax dollars and statewide tax dollars that go towards it. So this is another one where you are actually augmenting the service that is being provided by other agencies. Once again, it's one of those that there are others out there who we do not support, that as soon as you open this door, you're going to have a number of other social services that provide very valuable services for a variety of needs out there in the community. And we have one of the ways we've been able to keep our tax rate so low, our budget so low, is that we haven't gotten involved in social services that are actually the responsibility of the state, county, and federal government. With that said, I do think it's a community development block grant. It's one of those...
Technically federal dollars.
Yeah, technically federal dollars. So if you were to want to do this, I really think it needs to stay in that category versus your local city tax dollars. It is that's your decision as city council, but I'm just throwing out my experience as to what happens with these social services and how they can really expand once you open that door. And that this is, what is your mission? What is your responsibility versus responsibility of other agencies? But if you want to do this, the federal grant and the CDBG grant would be, and it was under that, what category it would come under would be the category that we do the recreation.
Public service.
Public service, the recreation grants would be the same kind of concept. So, and there's a, I think it's 15% maximum you can do on that. But what that would be is taking your consolidated plan, your five-year plan, adjusting that and plugging that in and going through those steps. We have to have this year's application by middle of August. There isn't enough time to go through that public process for this year. So this would be something you could consider in the future, along with housing and all those. It sounds like you really want to take a look at our future plans for that. I would really strongly discourage you from using local tax dollars for these type of programs and find the appropriate dollars for it. Not to say it's not a good idea to find appropriate dollars, yes, but your local property tax dollars are not a good idea.
Are they maximizing their state and county contributions? My point is, can we help them at that? Help them in writing the grants and whatnot to get to maximize those dollars? I could see us doing something like that.
I can't answer that question for you. I will ask them again that they should reach out to you.
Yeah,
sometimes you don't know what you don't know.
Right. Yes, so definitely I would like better. To talk to them.
But that's more of something that I was thinking that kind of money would be used for. I mean, I see the bike paths going now. We've already done that. But things that actually affect the people that need the money the most, maybe, you know, daycares or the free clinics and stuff like that, another senior center, because my mother has nowhere to go right now. Something that would affect the people from the low to medium income more so than a bike path.
And I should just mention that the doctors are all pro bono. It's the cost of the supplies and the medications themselves is where the costs come in. And they do get several grants. Their budget was, and they have good reserves as well.
Yeah.
But they are looking to the future and understanding that if they want to make this program continue to work in the environment that they're dealing with, in the medical funding environment, that they're going to have to figure out a way.
So that's the idea of the Community Development Block Grant, federal grants, is to have your local elected officials, your local governing bodies, make decisions as to the best use of those dollars.
And I see that after next year, we can really look at that.
Yeah. We've already psychologically committed funds to complete that Soto Woods path, but that's got an end in sight.
Right. Yeah.
At that point, I think I'm hearing that we'd be better off not trying that kind of project in future, but doing things that are more directly related service to people.
Yeah. Okay. But let the council at that time decide that.
Yeah. Okay. I think.
But in the meantime, if we can offer some support services, help them, be sure they're maximizing their grants. Manager, you raised an interesting point. Right now, the county is in intensive discussions with state and federal agencies about our intracoastal waterway. I've received a number of phone calls from concerned maritime businesses, very much concerned about what the county may do. And I raised the question to one of the county commissioners. A good portion of the intracoastal waterway runs through the city of Palm Coast. Why aren't we at the table? Well, the answer is exactly what you said. The county is the person with whom the state and the feds communicate. Same thing on this issue. This is not a city issue. This is a county issue. The funds flow through the county. So if we're going to maintain that kind of separation of city and county, then we need to do it.
The state doesn't recognize the cities.
We're just a little after
part. All.
Anyway,
who should they contact for support?
With our foundation and done with others is we would do Marcia, our part-time writer, and to help them with writing. If that's what they need, grants and those type of things.
But I think before they go to Marshall, they need to come to somebody on staff.
Right. That's exactly what they did before.
Contact. So who would the contact person be? The city manager's office?
It'd be me, and I'm the one that would authorize for her to work on that during her part-time hours. Okay. If that's what that partnership, be happy to do that.
That sounds like a foundation for something more in the future.
Good. We'll do that then. I don't hear any objections, so that looks easy. Are we ready to move on?
Moving.
This is just kind of a summary of fiscal year 15 through 16 proposed revenues. Property taxes, obviously, the property taxes in there for fiscal year 16 are based on the proposed trim rate that we've issued. A couple things I kind of want to point out: the communication services tax. We got, Mr. Landon had mentioned that a little earlier, but we continue to see an erosion of those tax collections, which they're going down about another $25,000 or so.
Is it this one or?
That's the CST.
The CST is communication services tax. The intergovernmental revenues are our grants, but are also things like our sales tax and our state revenue sharing that flow through the state. Those continue to trend up based on the state revenue estimates, which is good. The charges for services, this is where the general fund is receiving the, when we talk about like construction and engineering, those fees from the utility and the stormwater department that are paying into the general fund. That's why you see that big increase because of that change. The golf and tennis center, the proposed numbers are what we consider to be real numbers, not pie in the sky estimates that we've had in the past. So you'll see that those are down from the former management proposals for revenues in the past.
I would like to touch on that because I had a pretty firm conversation with Kemper that they've never met their revenue targets. And when you talk to their frontline staff, it's kind of, we didn't really think we would. We were hoping we would, but we didn't think they were that realistic. And so I talked to their regional manager and said, I don't want pie in the sky. I want some things that we can rely on because when they don't hit the target and they're part of the general fund, it hurts. And that we're confident, as you can see, once again this year, down here, we're going to be over in revenue. You should always be over in your revenue. You should always try to estimate low.
I like that.
They've always been up. So that's why you see such a drastic decrease, is because my conversation with them is, you better hit the target. You better come in over this year. And so then they said, well, in that case, we've got to get more real. So these are more real.
Okay. Well, they're only working on a two-year contract, aren't they?
Yep.
So they're halfway through it.
Yeah. So I just want to let you know that wasn't just them saying, well, we think we're going to decrease. That was, they think they're actually going to do better, but not as rosy as they've been saying in the past.
Chris, what are the transfers? Are we rolling over $777,000 from one year to the next?
No, those are transfers into the general fund. Those would be in lieu of tax transfers that come from the enterprise funds.
Okay.
And right now they're I'm anticipating them to be the same or close to being the same. I can't really finalize that number until I know what the final millage rate's going to be.
Okay.
And, so there's always a little bit of tweaking. I doubt they'll be exactly the same as last year, but that's just.
But the enterprise fund revenues should go up because we have more residents, shouldn't they?
Yes, but that's not really related to the tax transfers, what the enterprise fund revenues are.
All right.
And again, that's kind of where we are right now. We continue to refine those numbers. You can go ahead. And then again, just kind of show the slide again of where we are with the taxable value and history. We need to go over that a lot at this point. And again, that we set the trim rate the same as last year's millage rate. Those notices will be going out in August. 2 weeks from now, we'll talk about all the proprietary funds, utility, stormwater, solid waste, building permit funds. Those are primary proprietary funds. All of our other special miscellaneous small special revenue funds, and there's more than I can count, as well as our capital improvement program. So it'll be quite a long meeting to go over those things. The 25th, we'll come back with any final decisions the City Council needs to make as it relates to the first official budget presentation, and we'll kind of review a preview of what the presentation will be at the September 9th meeting to make sure we're all comfortable with that, and then roll right into September 9th. That's where we are. Of course, Lena and I are available to go through all the details of whatever anybody wants to see and know, whether you want to know it or not. And we'll put those few documents we talked about, the City Council detail, as well as the detailed budget requests from the golf and the tennis center. We'll put those out on the link, and I'll re-email out that link once those are out there.
We'll also be adding some additional worksheets as some of our proprietary funds are finalized. We'll have some additional budget worksheets.
She's giving me my homework this
morning. Yeah, that was aimed at him.
that's all we have for this. Yeah.
All right. I didn't mention it before, but this is a workshop. There is no public participation, but anything that was discussed at the workshop is fair game for public comment at our upcoming city council meeting. Unless anything else they'd like to comment upon. So, that being said, Mr. Vice Mayor?
Move to adjourn.
We are adjourned. Thank you very much.